Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! This is my gallbladder. He's a Republican, you know. Yeah, we're going to go to the doctor in the morning. Agnes is making me. We're going to drill another $50 hole in my wallet. Or $100 or whatever this guy costs. And go and sit down with people and see if we can beg and scrape and roll on our backs and generally abase ourselves. And try to get this godforsaken thing out of my gut. Yeah. Hi. Let's try this again. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. We call what we do here Conversation Radio. The Horn is a nearly 7-year-old attempt. We'll be 7 years old on the 24th day of October. Not that far away, really. 8 days, as a matter of fact. In those 7 years, we have been doing our dadgumdest to foster a spirit of conversation and easy dialogue, a little bit of fun, a little bit of chicanery, the occasional soupçon of outrage, and make something a little bit different on the airwaves. I think there's a reason for that. Every day in my email box, I get the Talkers Magazine update. I think I got that free when I became one of the Frontier 50, top 50 talkers in America. It beats the hell out of a certificate suitable for framing. But there is an interesting story in the Talkers Magazine Daily Dish. They just had their big talk radio confab out in Los Angeles. I would have loved to have been there. I keep having these weird dreams where I go to Los Angeles. Go figure. I'm not saying it has any. It's not like I walk around going, I want to go to Los Angeles. No, I have these recurring dreams where I go to Los Angeles. And I had them before. I had them before 7 years ago. I don't know what they are. But anyway, they had their big Talkers Magazine to do in Los Angeles. The Horn, by the way, is available on a wide variety of platforms, including but not limited to Stitcher Internet Radio, TuneIn Radio, where we are very well thought of, by the way. Tuner Internet Radio, Dar FM, Streama.com. And you can get the podcast feed at whiterosesociety.org or iTunes. And, you know, Dr. John found those podcast awards, I guess, discovered them last Thursday? And yesterday was the closing date for them. That's okay. Because this time, next year, we'll be ready. I hear it comes with a secret decoder ring, and, well, I want it for Agnes. It would be a feather in her cap. The Horn, by the way, is listener-supported, and we have a kind challenge out there this evening. It comes from our buddy Sal. Sal offered a $100 offered a $100 Titanic Tuesday challenge earlier today. I asked him if he had any message. And this was Sal's only message. He said, just keep promoting the AIC Act. I believe it's vital. I can do that, Sal. And I can do that with a smile on my face and a song in my heart. So here's the drill. You probably already know it. Sal will match the first $100 in contributions that come in this evening. And that will get us... Sorry, the drum roller has the night off. He's in a tree stand somewhere around here. That'll get us right up on top of where we need to be this time of the month. So the $100 Sal's Keep Promoting the AIC Act Challenge is on the table for this Thorn in the Side Thursday. No, it's not Thorn in the Side Thursday. It's Titanic Tuesday, Bob. I think some of that gallbladder stuff's backing up into my brain. It's Titanic Tuesday. Sal's Titanic Tuesday Challenge. I love, by the way, was it David from Maine a week or so ago who mentioned that the Savage Wiener has disappeared from the airwaves? Some sort of contract dispute, and he said, F it, we'll do it, we won't do it live, and walked. So I opened this email from Talkers Magazine, and the number one ad up in the primary position, Alex Jones is your best replacement for the Savage Wiener. Nothing. There's nothing parasitic about Alex Jones. Hi, I'm Alex Jones. Whoever told that guy he should do... Many people have told me I have a radio voice comparable to the late, great John Facenda. No. No, Al, you don't. But anyway, there was a story over there out of the Los Angeles Talkers Magazine Roundup or whatever it was. New Media Seminar is what it was called. The keynote speech was presented by Courtside Entertainment Group CEO and Westwood One founder Norm Pattiz. He said that Rush Limbaugh's Sandra Fluck controversy has been a serious blow to the nationally syndicated talk radio business. He said that although the hype in the consumer media has died down, people on the streets, I'm reading directly from the Talkers Magazine copy here, has died down, people on the streets trying to sell controversial talk radio at the national level are finding it harder than ever, and he fears the national talk syndication model may be permanently harmed. He also commented on the current structure of major broadcasting companies burdened with high debt loads that hamper programming. You catch that? Current structure of major broadcasting companies burdened with a high debt load that hampers programming. How many times have I said that there's no way, there is no way to sell enough bowling ball picking up the bowling ball picking up vacuum cleaners and dropping them on Swedish mattresses, upon which some man is growing hair on the top of his head by virtue of a new herbal extract from the South American jungle. You can't sell enough of that. It's mathematically impossible to sell enough of that crap to make up for Flush Flimball's $50 million a year salary and then add in Hannity's and add in Beck's and add in and add in and add in and add in. The model is collapsing, in other words. He also commented on the structure of major broadcasting companies burdened with a high debt load that hampers programming. Pattiz said that the days of two stations battling creatively in a market are almost gone because the corporations are singularly concerned with reducing their debt load and are not able to focus their energies on building and supporting programming and personalities with which they can compete in the advertising wars. That's a very long and complex way of saying that terrestrial radio is dying. Guess what's replacing it? You're listening to it. Although I just don't foresee the future where we're going to have ads for buy gold now to buy the vacuum cleaner that picks up the Swedish bowling ball and drops it on the Swedish mattress. I don't see that happening. Because this attempt, this enterprise, couldn't survive that. But think of yourselves as time travelers. We're out there in the future. The horn is out there. Michael just wrote in and said, Enterprise? Is it a 7-year mission to boldly go where no conversation has gone before? Yeah, I think it is, says Michael. P.S. Don't wear your red shirt tomorrow when you see the doc. That's okay, Michael. I've still got lines. Remember, Scotty had a red shirt, too. It's the red shirt and no lines combination that spells grim death. Right. Yeah. So I can look at the doc and say, Doc, my gut can't stand much more. Okay, I won't do that anymore. You win. Marty with a question. So does that also mean that terrestrial radio will soon become a desert of sports talk and religious industrial complex stations? Ultimately, Marty, I think that it probably means, yeah, and eventually the religion industrial complex stations will even choke out the undergrowth of sports talk. Yeah. Oh, by the way, my apologies for not being in the chat room. Like ever so many of you that I've spoken with lately, Java doesn't like me anymore. At least not on this computer. So, it is Titanic Tuesday. Titanic Tuesday, the name, for so long, Tuesday remained nameless. We had Moran Monday, prayer meeting Wednesday, thorn in the side Thursday, Friday on the front porch. Titanic was nameless. Until that day when our good friend Jim told us the story of the right-wing blatherskate about 40 miles from here, who explained that there are fossilized shellfish in the rock strata of West Virginia because of the movement of the Titanic plates. We honor that. We honor that level of right-wing idiocy every Tuesday here on the Horn with Titanic Tuesday, so named for the movement, slow though they may be, of the Titanic plates. Dr. John has passed out the night's first toaster. Two toasters for the red shirt reference and reply. I'll give my toaster to Michael. He got it all started. So, I got a problem. Beyond the fact that this computer is all effed up. I got a problem. Well, before I get to the problem, Michael. So, you're Scotty now? I'm picturing you under the desk with a disassembled computer on the phone with John Fox saying, I'm giving it all she's got! Well, I promised I wouldn't do that anymore. Actually, I'm pretty sure that exact thing has happened. Okay, fine, says Michael. Disregard my fashion advice. Best wishes at the doc. Thanks, Michael. Yeah, that really has happened. And it's happened. It has literally happened for hours on end back when Peter was teaching me to, much against my own will, build my own computer. It's okay, Bob. You can do this. You can do this. You can learn this. I don't think I can, Peter. But we got it done. I built this thing, and I must say that I'm proud of how it's held up. It's just old and tired and running XP. And I think that may be part of the Java problem. They may not be Is Java supporting XP anymore? But anyway, I got a problem. And it's a problem that people who do this sort of thing like to have. Lord knows I do. I got too much stuff. And here's the real nub of the problem. It's all prayer meeting Wednesday stuff. So somehow or another, I got to shoehorn it in to Titanic Tuesday. And they do kind of, in a way, often run together. We're going to get through this. It's a hell of a dilemma. But there's just some stuff you can't leave on the table. You got to leave it all on the field, Kincaid! Right? Marty wanting to know, Star Trek reference, if you're going to the doctor, does yours look like McCoy? And which McCoy? Crusher, Bashir, the Holodoc, or Phlox? Doesn't look like Phlox. Doesn't look like McCoy. Either McCoy. Certainly doesn't look like the Crusher. Maybe the Holodoc? This one's got a beard. Ron and Raleigh. Hey, Bob. Terrestrial radio's dying, is it? Well, we know who killed it, don't we? Can you say Clear Channel? And as Mr. Spock said, there was no deity involved. It was me cross-circuiting to be. A couple of lovely suggestions from Ron for bumper music here in the not-too-distant future. Yeah. I think he knows which one I'm going to wind up playing. Too good not to. Jim wishing good luck with Dr. McCoy, the DeForest Kelly version. Want to talk about fashion and accessories, he says. Yeah, that's right, Jim. We do have the candy pageant tonight, which reminds me, I got a couple of emails in from our buddy Philip. Hadn't heard from him in a little while, and I worry about people when you don't write. So it was good to hear from him. And I will get to that just in a moment. See, I can't set up everything like I used to like to set things up. Simply because the production computer will not tolerate it. But we've got a couple of great emails to go into here in the next few minutes. And I like to, when y'all take time to write extensively, I like to give that the time that it deserves. And there's some amazingly, I would say this is the most intelligent radio audience in America, bar none, let's put it that way. Anyway, Philip wrote in, and he said, first, the subject line, disagreement about natural gas resources in West Virginia. And whenever I see the word disagreement, I go, oh, no, really? I hate getting stuff wrong because you guys very gently call me on it. Well, okay, sometimes not so gently. But then I realized it was Philip writing, and I realized at the same time there was probably going to be giggling involved, so I sort of clutched my gallbladder. First, says Philip, I'm relieved you're feeling better. I'm listening to last night's show on podcast because I was having my own issues with respiratory problems and went to bed early. I'm writing not to elicit sympathy from someone who has had his own share of woes with ill health and inadequate resources to improve it, but to strongly disagree with your statement about natural gas reserves in West Virginia. I know the issue affects you, your family, and your community directly, but I believe that Joe Manchin and the coal industry have enough natural gas in their bloviations to pollute the airwaves and our minds for years to come. I think I'm being outsmarted here. Frankly, Bob, I'm disappointed that you underestimated the considerable natural gas and coal reserves that will amply provide energy to Joe Manchin's speeches and campaigns. After all, if there were no coal mine disasters in West Virginia, Joe wouldn't have been able to gain national attention for his leadership and empathy toward miners' families when miners were trapped and dying below the ground. No, Joe has enough natural gas to exceed his or anyone else's needs during a lifetime, and I'm so relieved that I am agnostic and don't believe in reincarnation. I don't think I could stomach another go-round of Joe Coleman Manchin saying to the national media with his voice barely audible, "We did not receive the miracle we were praying for. This journey has ended, and now the healing will start." Yet, by the way, as an aside, the healing may actually start fairly soon because Ken Ward, a magnificent reporter down at the Charleston Gazette, West Virginia state paper, reported in yesterday's edition that the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of West Virginia, one Mr. Booth Goodwin, says that we can expect more announcements regarding further and future criminal charges against higher-ups at Mass Energy. I'm hoping the Transportation Security Administration is on the lookout for anyone matching Don Blankenship's decision trying to fly to Brazil. But anyway, back to Philip. Sadly, Joe, the miracle for which you but not the miners' families were praying is that you could deftly exploit the deaths of 29 miners to garner national attention and be able to work assiduously after their deaths to support the owner bastards who mercilessly exploit the earth's resources, the miners, and the health of the communities. You were governor during the nation's worst mine disaster in 40-odd years and responded promptly by asking the coal industry to support your campaign for senator. You turned the office of governor and state senator into the largest brothel exclusively run for coal owners in present-day America, and unlike Elliot Spitzer, have paid no political price for your dalliance with prostitution. Consequently, Joe, I am fervently looking forward to reading the second volume in your autobiography entitled Mine Disaster, Mine Zieg. I really enjoyed the first volume, The Governor's Mansion, Heating with Coal and Success with Hot Air in West Virginia. Still, Bob, I can readily understand that the amount of gall emanating from Ersatz Democrat Mansion in the coal industry must be doing to you physically, and hope you can better withstand it in the future or acquire health insurance to receive better care. For that matter, Bob, Philip continues, I also hope Ms. Crowley does well moderating the alleged debate, because I know the success of her prospective new show on Fox, prospectively called Living Large with Candy, depends on it. As an aside, the term moderating the alleged debate is so apt because not moderating the debate may inadvertently expose Romney's lack of core ethics and radical agenda. We must have moderation of these political monologues to avoid exposing the radical veer towards fascism that Romney is currently exploiting to be elected. For me, reading Joe's autobiography and watching Ms. Crowley, may be the only pleasures I can afford after former governor and former human being Mitt Romney wins in November. The wealthier homes in my community are all displaying Romney signs, and the coup in 2000 proved that a corrupt court and more corrupt party can steal an election, and the American public will yawn and turn the channel on cable for more mindless entertainment and endless reruns. After all, to paraphrase Al Gore, it's not important who wins, it's important that we all unite and wish success for the new president. The grim reality is that there is too much racism that white voters won't publicly acknowledge when polled, and too much money supporting Romney for the comedy team of Romney and Ryan not to win. I suppose I should be relieved that I majored in German in college, so I can adapt to living Mitt Romney. That's with one T. But a Scheisskopf by any other name is still a Scheisskopf. How ironic that Romney's election will be the blackest period in my adult political life, and I have no doubt that he will be much more niggardly in the funding of social programs than the current occupant of the White House. By the way, that word that I just used, that is a perfectly good, acceptable, and usable English word that is of Swedish. And our buddy Scott in Sweden can check me on this. It is of Swedish extraction. It means to be miserly. It's spelled with an A, by the way. Philip continues, I know Fox viewers will be so relieved when blacks are again serving rather than eating meals at the dining room table in the White House. Mitt Romney's election will be a first for us in so many ways. At a minimum, he will be the first member of the Church of Latter-day Saints to serve as president and first son of a Mexican immigrant to serve as president. Obviously, unlike some of your callers, I believe the party that believes in the right to life but not to live will be successful in November. Please take care of yourself, Bob. Your absence on Friday made me realize how miserable many of my evenings will be if the show isn't available to keep me sane during these insane times. Like Kevin, I'm on a very limited income because I'm unable to work, albeit still employed, pending a decision regarding my disability application, which means there's no state or federal help available, and if my claim for disability isn't approved by OPM, I and my family are royally screwed. However, the singular, genuine, progressive voice provided by the horn is so important that I weighed donating what I could send last month versus whether that small amount of money would have significantly ameliorated my indebtedness. The horn won out, and I suspect it will continue to do so. I'll end this here so I can watch this week's post-vice presidential debate movie on Fox, Saving Private Sector Ryan. And that's Philip. It's not all Philip had to say. And this is too good not to share. I wish this computer was behaving a little bit better. Philip added, as I listened to last night's filibobster again, I realized that a paradox exists which could be exploited by the president to attract conservative voters. Listen to this. This is good. Given that the statistics show that the unemployment rate has been sustained for months by loss of local, state, and federal government jobs, can't one argue that if, in fact, President Obama is responsible for the loss of jobs, the type of jobs lost show that he is a firm believer in less government and, as a direct consequence, less government workers at all levels? So far, I've held my commitment and not watched the debates, even though a friend tried to lure me into doing so by describing them as spectacles. I informed him that your word pageant was a better description. I'm still mulling over whether to watch tomorrow night's, that would be tonight's debate, if only to determine whether the number of questions asked by Candy Crowley exceeds the number of her chins. I write this... Okay.
Sorry.
See, Philip, you made Agnes laugh out loud. She's looking over my shoulder while I read. It kind of drives me crazy, but after 20 years, it drives me crazier not to have her near me. I write this... As a large person myself, says Philip, but you won't catch me adopting the nickname Fill Up, F-I-L-L-U-P, to accentuate the obvious, as in Candy Crowley. I am mulling over watching because I've made a point of avoiding listening to Romney, a true believer in false prophets and false prophets, one being a P-R-O-H-E-T-S and the other being a P-R-O-F-I-T-S. To paraphrase Chris Christopherson, and this is brilliant, President Romney's just another word for Nothing left to lose. By the way, on benign correction with respect to the former governor's racist comment on Fox, you don't speak racial code language, you understand it. Okay, thank you. I appreciate that, Philip. I don't for a minute believe you or any horn listener would speak such language as a regular part of your and his or her daily conversations. Also, can we have a moratorium on speaking or writing about Coltergeist? She is so loathsome and impudent, outrageous, malicious, and proud of her white skin privilege, not to mention being consistently wrong, that just thinking of her nauseates me, and I really don't need to take any more promethazine for nausea than I currently do. I know a little about promethazine, don't I, dear?
Yes, you do.
Whee! The View clip you played, says Philip, said all that needs to be said about the mouth that roared. Hell, it's as depressing to think that she's a best-selling author as it is to anticipate a Romney presidency. Lastly, as a chronically ill person, I have frequented my share of emergency rooms. I really hope that the alternative treatment works, Bob, so you can avoid surgery and remain well, because having to provide the same medical history each time one is in the emergency ward is frustrating, and the interminable waiting and minimal treatment that one endures only exacerbates the frustration. We really need single-payer health care, my brother had it, Philip says. When he lived as a student and then undocumented immigrant in Canada, and he received health care that was equal to or better than my HMO, which is rated the best in my region. The dilemma of progressives is not knowing how to exploit, for political gain, people's altruism and kindness in the same way that reactionaries and conservative radicals exploit their bigotry and hatred. There endeth the lesson. Take that to heart, and remember, President Romney is just another word for nothing left to lose. Yes, it is. Like I said, this is the smartest radio audience in the entire United States. Yeah, remember College Bowl or whatever it was way back in the day? You know what I'd love to do? And I think we could probably sell it as a TV series. College Bowl as a series of quiz show competitions between, say, various members of various talk radio audiences. We'll take, for instance, the Horn audience and put it up against, I don't know, the Alex Jones audience. Jesus, it'd be like shooting fish in a barrel. You know it would be. Let's see. There's a couple of other emails I want to work in here. Our buddy Paul from Portland says, I know it's been a long time, but I've been listening to podcasts when I can. I would like you and the Horn family to know that I graduated with my master's in chemistry in June. Wait a minute. Everybody clap. And none of that little golf clap bullshit either. These are real claps. Congratulations, Paul. And I'm still looking for work, says Paul. Over the past 3 months or so, I've been looking for just chemistry, but at the end of September started branching out looking for part or seasonal jobs to try and help pay the bills. I want to call in, but money's tight and I can't afford the cell phone minutes. We understand. I just wanted to write in and pass on some information about the job market I've experienced and share some data from other 2012 graduates in Portland. Note, these graduates are friends of mine, or friends of friends, that have graduated in June of this year, and almost all of them are in a technical field of some sort. Chemists, mathematicians, physicists, engineers, computer scientists, etc. You know, when I first read over this, I thought, this will be interesting, and it is. First of all, in the 3.5 months I've been hunting, I've gotten to the interview stage with 4 companies so far, which is roughly a 10% response rate. 2 of those companies went to 2nd or 3rd interviews. 1 of those companies, it was down to me and 2 other candidates. They decided to hire the other 2 candidates. BS chemists, as interns. Basically, they decided to hire 2 people for half the price or less of 1 person. I don't fault them for that. It creates 2 jobs instead of 1. The other company I'm waiting to hear from to see if I move to the next stage sometime this week. Fingers crossed, Paul. All of ours. When I compared stories with my friends and former professors, they're astounded. Most of my fellow classmates have gotten 1 interview in their field at best since June, and 1 friend has had 2. The fact that I have had 4 puts me way ahead of the rest. I can't help but be reminded of Sandra and her constant refrain of the new normal when it comes to the job market. I'm glad that I have had these few opportunities, but it shouldn't be this way. It is hard not to accept this new normal, because it doesn't look like it's changing anytime soon. I know that the job market is adding jobs with the favorable job report last month, but what kind of jobs are being created? If you have any information on this, please share it. I can tell you the technical job market is incredibly tight. There are still many recent layoffs, and competition is fierce. As a recent graduate, you're getting beat from both ends. First, the layoffs have still flooded the market with people between 3 to 10 years of experience in your field. Secondly, my class at Portland State University was the largest class to graduate in its history. There were roughly 6,600 graduates this year, over 1,000 of which were master's and PhD graduates. So you're competing with a record number of new graduates. These two factors are creating a phenomenal amount of competition for positions, making it hard to find any job related to their field for a college graduate. When the economy tanked in 2008, a lot of people, including me, returned to school with the help of student loans, and now, 4 years later, we're beginning to enter a job market that cannot absorb us. Next year, 2013, we'll have even a larger number of graduates. At PSU, the peak of the student bubble pushing its way through will be graduating in 2013 and 2014. It is a grim reality for many recent graduates. Be prepared for the student loan bubble to pop sometime in the next 2 years. Wow. On another topic, Paul says, I read a story last week about how cattle ranchers are trying to keep their cattle fed with candy because... Candy Crowley? With candy because it is cheaper than feed due to last summer's drought. One of those signposts, Paul says, on the road to rock bottom for America. We've gone from grass-fed cattle to corn-fed to gummy fed. Isn't that a little like the alcoholic going from Jack Daniels to Mad Dog 20 to rubbing alcohol? We're close to hitting the bottom of keeping up our food supply. And if we're not, I don't want to see what comes next. My best to the Horn family, says Paul, and to your family, Bob, and ours back to you, Paul. I know that you've had other sources of funding pulled, and you're walking the edge going from month to month. I plan to contribute again once I get employed, but everything is super tight right now. We understand. Believe me, we know. When I do get hired, there will be a Paul's First Paycheck Challenge. Damn. Thank you, Paul. Keep fighting, Bob. We're fighting with you. Best regards, Paul from Portland, soon to be Paul from parts unknown. And Paul's note raises a variety of questions, not the least of which is, and I have tremendous respect for sciences and tremendous respect for mathematical disciplines, because I can't do that stuff. Our buddy Jug of Punch has to send me tables and charts that show me what the breakout for the money we need to raise is, so I don't have to do my gazintas and cipherins on the fly. But honestly, are we not told day in and day out, including on television advertisements, that America's best hope is its technology education? Help young people to study the sciences. The sciences are where the good jobs are. Attention, George Jetson. You know, that kind of stuff. So what? There's, I mean, I heard it in the last week or so. Oh, well, no. Don't worry about it. No, see, there's only job shortages in certain sectors. But by God, if you're a scientist, you can go to work tomorrow. Bull. I suggest that what we are witnessing is a case of, let me see if I can figure out how I want to say this. This is an academic and educational thinning of the herd. Paul, if you want to make the big bucks, you know where you go, my friend? China. Because I'm told that a university education in China is not like a university education here. We had an email to that effect from a listener in China a year or so ago. I'm told that they will pay decently for people with skills like yours. It is only America that will not pay decently for skills like yours. There's been a fraud perpetrated in this country. And I think there was a point to it. Don't major in those stupid social sciences. Don't major in those liberal arts. Go out there and get yourself a technical degree. And I don't say this as a denigration. America needs young scientists and mathematicians. That's how we'll grow the economy. And then you see what Paul's dealing with. The goal is ultimately to have everybody in this country working for something like $3 an hour. And I said this a long time ago when NAFTA first went through. When we have destroyed the economy to the point that Americans are willing to work for $3 an hour, all the jobs will come back. Because by then it will mean that people in India and China are demanding $5 an hour. This is a war being waged on turf that was selected by Milton Friedman. And it is a hateful war. By the way, Jim with a message of goodwill. Best wishes to Philip in dealing with OPM. They can be very contentious. Med documentation is critical, Jim offers. Then from Dr. John, who's kind of been where Paul is. Congrats to Paul and my sympathies. I feel his issues, I really do. Trying to float between limited-term jobs is very trying, both economically and socially. But nobody can take that degree away, and you're getting interviews. That's a great sign. You, sir, will succeed. My best, John. I get a little shiver when I see this kind of stuff. Jim's note to Philip, John's to Paul. All of our conjoined good thoughts. This is real. And this means that there is still hope for this country. Because we are forming that core that will look out for its neighbor. That core that, even though it does not profess it, is living the most humane teachings of some of the world's most enlightened people. Living the teachings of Socrates, living the teachings of Gandhi, of Hillel, of Jesus, Dr. King. And when you live them, you spread them. And when you spread them, things change. I mentioned earlier Philip's line, President Romney's just another word for nothing left to lose. Marty offers, actually, I consider President Romney another way of saying, it's how far to international waters? Yeah. Stop it, Jim. I'm not even reading that out loud. That's just awful. It's about 20 minutes before the hour, and we are still awaiting the first matching response to Sal's Titanic Tuesday challenge. It really would be a shame to wait to let such an offer go to waste. All right, let's get this over with. The pageants. Gonna watch them. Is this all wrestling? Are we going to see the new and improved Barack Obama come out? Is this going to be, if he was Ali rope-a-doping a young and ferocious George Foreman last time, is this going to be the young and ferocious Ali just knocking the snot out of Sonny Liston? Does it all matter? Is the fix in? If he absolutely devastates Bishop Willard Romney, will the for-profit media even notice? Or will they do what they did after the, it was sickening, after the Biden-Ryan pageant, and have Mary Matalin there wearing a suit made from the upholstery of a 1957 Edsel to complain that, oh, his laughing and his eye rolling were just as bad as Al Gore's sigh. He did everything but look at his watch. See, I think if Barack Obama flogged the very bespoke suit off of Bishop Willard Romney, all the way down to his magic underwear, and made him run crying for his mama. I don't think the for-profit media would declare a clear victory, because they can't afford to. And I mean that literally. They can't afford to. There is too much money at stake between now and November the 6th, probably still on the order of $1 billion. Shared out among primarily six multinational corporations for them to acknowledge a lead. They've got to have the horse race. And playing upon this, the Republican Party has to have the horse race. Because it's the horse race. It's the narrow margin within the... They've got to get within the margin of error. That is what, in turn, makes possible the theft of an election. I wish it was not so, but it certainly seems that way to me. But I do, as noted, I have a wealth. I have a wealth of stories this evening. And a whole bunch of them have a prayer meeting Wednesday flavor to them. But we'll just have to deal with that. Right out of the... You know, you got to be titanically stupid. To go out on tour and be a relatively famous right-winger and have everybody know you're married and be swanning around with a sweet young thing and folks not notice. I mean, I-O-K-I-Y-A-R, sure, but you can't slap them in the face with it as if you were carrying the portable perpetual mackerel with which to do it. You know... Dinesh D'Souza, the hack, out there hustling
2016 Obama's America, the Kenyan nightmare,
or whatever it's called. Yeah, it's run straight to DVD.
It's the number one selling DVD in America!
Darn it. He's famous for saying things like this.
Rhino Republicans are analogous to fathers who,
and there's a reason for this,
fathers who proudly proclaim their conservativeness at dinner parties or perhaps during early afternoon phone calls to El Rushbo's show, but let their independently minded wives, translation, women who get their marching orders from St. Oprah or more recently The View, pump their teenagers full of birth control and encourage their daughters to live the lives for which their bra-burning foremothers fought so valiantly. Indeed, this particular post was inspired by one such rhino dad I know exceedingly well at exactly one such dinner party several years ago. Rhino dads are those guys who will sheepishly proudly fill out Republican ballots on Election Day while their wives openly mark their support for things like freedom of choice and freedom from poverty. What most people don't realize, and indeed what I didn't realize until I blocked out the mad crowd, is that these women and their rhino men are like a vast national living history museum, pictographically illustrating exactly why the 19th Amendment was never the best idea ever. What did we close the show with last night?
the woman in Mississippi who says it was a bad idea for the women to have, you know, women folk be, you know, doing all that voting? Why, the 19th Amendment was never the best idea, and in fact more closely resembles the greatest show on earth. Think Ringling Brothers. If these modern families keep at it, museums telling the hieroglyphical tales of our civilization might be all that is left of us. Right, because we communicate in hieroglyphs. In the 1960s, the 1970s, now this is all Dinesh D'Souza. This is set up. You gotta just enjoy. In the 1960s and 1970s, feminists and liberals of other stripes started pointing out the hypocrisies of what they termed patriarchy. Time and again, they urged us to recognize humans' natural and animal instincts in relation to traditional morality, and therefore to reject traditional institutions such as marriage as outdated, because now these intellectual elites had things like biology and sociology. You know, those sciences from the pits of hell, lies from the pits of hell, what Reverend Dr. Brother Representative Paul Brown was talking about there at the building full of dead deer heads Baptist Church. Things like women's studies, gender studies, and critical race theory to back them up. Right, because, you know, we can't be studying no history of racial dynamics in the United States or nothing. They pointed to infidelity or infamous... You gotta listen to this part real good. They pointed to infidelity or infamous sexual desire surveys conducted by homosexuals among traditionally married couples to prove their theses. Limb by limb, they tore the traditional family to shreds until they reduced us to the shining bastion of zoological, but even animals aren't this bad and do not depend on the state to care for them, cesspool equality that we have now in every major American ghetto, and which is seeping out into the middle and upper classes in less animated ways. These people, like their European counterparts, are the ones who will go extinct. For instance, we have raised an entire generation of boys who, permanently scarred by their parents' divorces, perhaps over issues such as infidelity, pay attention, cannot emotionally connect or commit to any one woman in any meaningful way, and so we also have an entire generation of girls for whom that coveted diamond solitaire comes later and later. Right, because that's the essence of marriage, isn't it? It's the diamond solitaire from Zales. See what a great payment I could be for... see how I work the product placement in there? And they don't want me for commercials, who knows. But anyway, it comes later and later in life with more and more contractual caveats, prenups. Somehow, when it happens after 5 years of living together, after 1 year of non-exclusive, followed by another 3 years of recurring breakups over the male's unwillingness to commit, getting that ring for which you girls will surely be paying your hard-earned half doesn't feel quite like the fairy tale it used to. I'm about ready to cry. And this goes on forever. But you heard all that infidelity business? The Evangelical World magazine reports that D'Souza has been introducing his fellow right-wing activists, a young woman, Denise Odie Joseph II, as his fiancée, even sharing a room with her, while at a conference with Alex McFarland, who interviewed D'Souza when he guest-hosted the Janet Mefford show. You don't want to listen. It's like listening to saw blades going across glass. He told World editor Warren Cole Smith that he had filed for divorce from his wife, Dixie. No, really. But according to court records, he only filed the day Smith spoke to him, and under California law, that starts the clock on a 6-month waiting period for divorce. You just heard what a fierce defender of marriage Dinesh D'Souza is, right? hypocrites. Liars. You know, Republicans. Oh, we got a million of them. Well, I mentioned the Dinesh D'Souza story. Simply because there are other stories that touch upon it. The story comes out of Iowa, as a matter of fact. And it's something that happened on the 7th day of October. On the 7th day of October, it was, what were we calling it? It was Pulpit Freedom Day, I think, is what the weirdos were referring to it as. Steve Youngblood is the pastor of City Church. Well, if this story gets much legs, it'll be showing up on South Park, and it'll be City Church, you know, City Grill, City Diner. They serve wonderful city chicken. City Church in Burlington, Iowa. And in the back of City Church in Burlington, Iowa, a Christian establishment, there were flyers that urged voters to, this is according to a Huffington Post story, urge voters to remove Justice David Wiggins, an Iowa judge who had voted to legalize same-sex marriage. According to a report from the Associated Press on September the 30th, a woman attending the church objected to the flyers because she was a member of the church and actually concerned about the body of the church. Objected to flyers on the grounds that it was illegal for tax-exempt organizations to promote political candidates or causes. Which is true. On October 7th, Pulpit Freedom Day, which was the day in which evangelical fundamentalist preachers were supposed to openly violate the law of the United States, therefore violating the strictures of Romans 13:11, which commands Christians to be obedient to the state. Pastor Steve Youngblood, who would, by the way, just noting, dwarf Candy Crowley, thundered from the pulpit, that said after that encounter, I'd like to slap her. Her husband should rise up and correct her for asking the church to follow the law of the United States of America. She needed to be slapped. Hit her again, I can put a little stank on it. The story notes, Pastor Youngblood castigated the woman's stance on gay marriage, saying, "Don't call yourself a Christian and do that. We need to draw a line in the sand. We need to begin to say that at City Church, this is how we're going to be." What makes me madder is that this person's husband won't correct them. I don't like rebellious women. I don't like rebellious men either. They're even worse. If you heard the sermon, I held it up and said, "Here it is, go get it." I'm not going to be bullied. I'm not going to be intimidated. I'm not intentionally breaking the law. Yes, you were. And he meant to, because he was encouraged to. Pulpit Freedom Sunday was actually a criminal conspiracy, because two or more individuals hatched a criminal plan, and one or more then took action on it, made what the law calls a substantial step. But that's the way criminals are when they get caught. They lash out, because they tend to be mentally ill, some of them, or sociopathic is what I mean. Well, it's somebody else's fault. It's never the sociopath's fault. You get it? Right. This is, of course, the world they wish to create, in which men may freely slap women, in which women are to remain silent in church, and if they have any questions, ask them of their husbands later when they get home, for it is shameful, according to 1 Corinthians chapter 14, for a woman to speak in church. Mitt Romney's just another word for nothing left to lose. So we find ourselves at the top of the hour, at the close of this Titanic Tuesday filibobster, although God knows we've got a ton more stuff. Your calls are coming up next. Line it up, light it up. 304-658-3333 is the direct dial number. 877-443-2366 is the number to dial if you needed need the toll-free coverage. We are, I am happy to report, thanks to two individuals, $60 of the way toward Sal's $100 Titanic Tuesday challenge. Thank you very much for getting us 60% of the way. I'm pretty sure we can do the other 40% in the next 2 hours. This is Conversation Radio on America's liberal voice, listener supported. The Green News Report is next. I'm Bob Kincaid.
I'm on a big black ball from a hole. I feel a hot wind on. some foreigner. I hear the talking of the DJ. Can't understand just what does he say. I'm on a Mexican radio. I'm on a Mexican radio. Thanks very much, everybody.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Eight minutes past the hour, and I got to tell you, you guys are chomping at the bit. All but one of the lines are lit up. And I want to get to all of them. And as such, I've decided not to run the Green News Report until, you know, maybe next hour or something, okay? So with that being the case, enough with the dilly-dallying. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello from Montana.
Well, hello, Montana. Are we reaching?
Can you hear me now? Depends on how much Verizon wants to accommodate me tonight, so the call might drop because it's that time of day. What's a gazenta?
Did you never watch the Beverly Hillbillies?
No.
You do your cipherins and your gazentas. 2 gazenta 4, 4 gazenta 8, 8 gazenta 16.
Okay, never mind. And I wanted to back up for a minute. It sounded, and I think it was Phillip's email when he was about Nothing Left to Lose, that he was giving Kris Kristofferson credit for those lyrics, and John Cash and Charlie Williams wrote that song. So
Kris Kristofferson wrote that song. Pretty sure.
Okay.
Me and Bobby McGee?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's Kris Kristofferson.
Well,
almost bet money on it.
Well, you and I ain't got no money, so this is a moot point. And thanks for bringing up the subject of Peter. All those days of Peter with under the desk with Peter at night, huh?
Oh, you make it sound like it was more fun than it was.
Well, Peter was having fun. Sort of.
Okay, I just did some on-the-fly research. Me and Bobby McGee by Kris Kristofferson and Fred Foster.
Oh.
Okay. Just saying.
Okay. Okay, it was Foster that I was giving that needed the credit. It was, yeah, but I didn't think it was totally Chris. Anyway, what am I arguing about this shit for? Anyway, I've been listening to archives because I've been kind of incognito for the last week, and I heard all the archives, and I wanted to respond to Juanita. Yes, thank you for... I'd forgotten all about those ladybugs, and they weren't the regular red ladybugs. They were the orange ones, those Asian are, 80 lady.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah, they were... God, the infestation was awful. Jesus.
Back in the day when we lived way out in the country as compared to where we are now, we had an infestation in a 110-year-old farmhouse. They were everywhere, and they stunk. That was the worst part. They didn't eat the wood, they just stunk.
Yeah, right. That was in New Market, Tennessee when I had that infestation. I never had them before. Haven't had them since. Anyway, I just wanted to thank Juanita for remembering that, because she said, I was just thinking about Kate. I thought, well, I haven't called in for a while. I'm sorry. And she started talking about the ladybugs. I thought, oh, my God. Also, I wanted to... Gazenta. That's so funny.
Jethro Bodine was graduated from the sixth grade and could do all his cipherins and his gazentas.
Okay. I appreciate hearing from new listeners. That's very, very cool. I hope that they understand that when you're talking about money, that you're not just being over dramatic that it's for personal use or whatever. And now that talk radio is losing its shine, it's most important that we keep going here. And it's really important for folks to know that we're hanging on by a mere thread. This is no joke. We only $40 from the goal tonight.
We just hit it.
Oh, my God. Thank you. Because sometimes when we get to that edge, it's like public radio. I call in at the last minute just so the challenge can get met, you know.
Right.
And I'm tired of, I'm a little bit like Kevin. I'm limited here, and I get tired of punching my PayPal button just to meet the goals. So thank you, whoever did that last little shot. That was so important. But we need to keep going, because just the idea of not having the horn, it just.
And you know, you remind me of something, Kate. I need clear statements from people, because I'm pretty persnickety. You know this. About trying to protect people's privacy unless they give me express permission to, you know, like you write an email and you mean for it to be read on the air, that kind of thing. If I want to give people public credit for what they do, and if it is okay with you for me to say, you know, who sent and what, or you know, in whatever method you prefer, please tell me so. So that I can name you, because I've had a lot of people say, please, Bob, don't ever mention my name.
Yeah.
And that's kind of been the default position over the years. But if you don't mind me mentioning your name, let me know.
I don't. Not at all.
Well, no, I mean, not just you, and I mean, not just you, but everybody.
Okay.
Obviously the people who put up the challenges, they've put their name to it. By the way, you got a note in from Jim. He says, best wishes to Kate, really, Jim. So.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate hearing Jim's Carolina accent when he says out. I just love listening to Jim talk. And I'm glad that email friendship of his burned down with the lady that got so awful. You don't need people like that in your life. That's why I keep my address book and pencil. if I don't get any response, every once in a while I go through my phone and I think,
oh, that's just great. So yeah, okay. So I'm in pencil. Okay, I understand.
No, actually, you're not in your current address. I was sending something to the wrong address. You said we haven't had that post office box at your house. You know, I haven't. I was sent Agnes or something, and I haven't had that. You said we haven't had that for a couple of years, so I haven't, whatever. And I keep meaning to send a check to the PMB because I wanted Wayne to have something in the box, and so I always forget to say hey to him. So is he doing okay, boss man, Wayne?
He is. He is working himself silly. He's got a brand new grandson, so his previous grandson now has a cousin.
Oh.
And he is the doting grandpa, if ever there was one.
Of course he is. Oh, of course he is.
But on top of it all, Wayne right now is in his element. It is a political season, and he's out there. Mm-hmm. He's out there doing God's work. And making sure people, especially folks in organized labor, don't do anything stupid like voting Republican.
Yeah. I thought of him the other day. I drove past one of the union halls here. I don't remember which one it is. And they've got all the Republican lawn signs out in front of it. And I thought, what the hell? So that just confirms one more time this is all circus. It's just bullshit.
Well, it is, and one of the most classic manifestations of that around here, Kate, is the fact that the United Mine Workers of America, who mm-hmm. haven't not endorsed the Democratic nominee for president,
mm-hmm.
probably for as long as there has
5 years.
Yeah, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
They have not. They have not endorsed either candidate in this election. We don't see either candidate as understanding the necessity of coal to America's future.
Oh.
Or some such ignorant drivel as that. But that didn't slow Cecil Clownshoes Roberts down from endorsing Joe Manchin. The ad I talked about last night where he said he's threatening to come and shoot anybody that speaks up against coal.
Oh God, that is just so. There's a place for heaven and for him and people like him. So.
I watched that the first time. You almost made me want to buy a dress just so I could pull it up over my head and run around the room.
Honey, I haven't owned a dress in I don't know. Probably.
I know, but you're the one who brought us that.
Well, me and Peter, I mean, Peter and I, that was our favorite.
Yeah, well, that's true.
So anyway, and then that woman last night, pulling the dress up over my head, that was her and the ERA and the women shouldn't vote, and I don't remember who it was or why she was even on air or why you were playing that clip. And then who was that you were... That one you just played?
Oh, Dinesh D'Souza, the one I just read about?
Whoever the hell that is, I don't know. But
he's a right-wing freak, friend of Ann Coulter, you know. Yeah.
Okay, no, say no more. I just, that stuff makes me so sad. I feel like we have failed somehow because in the early 70s, clear up until... It went to Congress, or went to for ratification. So in 1972, we worked so hard to get the ERA passed. It was bloody.
I don't know if you caught this on the archives, Kate, but Bishop Willard Romney's daddy, George, who when he had been governor of Michigan, and he was asked his opinion about it, and he said, "It's demonic."
Oh yeah. Well, him and, oh, God. Well, it just makes me so sad because I think we who worked so hard failed to keep it going. Something happened between then and 82 when they had a 10-year extension for the ratification and it failed. And so after 82, it was just nothing. It was toast. The Supreme Court called it moot and, there you go. So I just feel like sometime in there something happened, and maybe it was Reagan. I don't know. I can't blame him, but someplace along the way, we just needed to keep working at it, and we didn't, and whatever. So we still don't have equal rights and whatever.
One of the things that happened alongside it was that it was used, the Equal Rights Amendment, was the bigots took hold of it and said, this isn't really about the women's. This is about them homosexuals.
Oh, yeah, we were there, too, but we could have kept fighting. I mean, oh, my God. And whenever I hear that term, bra burning, I just have a white hot rage inside. Nobody burned no freaking bras. That was a advertisement. It was a ploy by Playtex or whoever, and they had that picture of the garbage barrel with the fire in it and people dropping bras in it. Bras were too expensive. If you had to wear them, you didn't burn them. Okay, if anybody burned a bra, it's because they didn't really need them, and it was a big show. It was drama. But the bra burning kind of, oh, Jesus, that is so heavily freighted for me, I just can't stand it. Oh, God.
Yeah, we kid and carry on, Kate, but it is so important for people to have access to words that you like what you just spoke, because that has become an embedded myth in the national consciousness, just like all those poor little wiped-out Wall Street millionaires who leapt from their office towers in 1929.
Right.
It might have happened once, maybe twice, but you know there was no reign of Wall Street financiers because here's the trick: they came out okay.
They did.
Yeah.
They did. And some of them were too fat to get out the window anyway. So.
Exactly.
There you go.
and the same thing with bra burning. Bra burning, as is the case with anything touching upon gender issues, bra burning says a lot more about men than it does about women.
Sure.
Or the concept of it does.
Thank you. I didn't even want to bring that up. But anyway, when I look back on those days, I mean, I'm older than Granny T. And I look back on the, I'd love to hook up with her and talk about criminal justice and shit. You know, she was in Texas and I was in Washington. Oh, my God. What a field for women to be in. It was wonderful. Mm-mm-mm. So anyway, I just wanted to just throw that out and say that I think that, I don't know what happened, but we didn't come very far. And, oh, and, yes, I wanted to also mention this election. We are bought and paid for here in Montana. There will be no election. It will be whoever spends the most money. I'm seriously concerned about John Tester winning the Senate back. I don't know. It's going to be tough because the ads that are coming out that I see once in a while, they're I don't know which ones to believe, and So we're back to where we were in 08. I'm not even going to bring it up because I sat in a little house in Alabama arguing till my face turned blue. This will not make a difference. He's an empty suit. He's a Chicago politician, and he's good slick talking. Oh, God, he's slick talking, and I guess he's good looking. I don't know. And this is not going to make any difference. It's not going to make any difference.
You cannot have wholesale changes in Empire, Kate.
We are toast. It's the end is here, and not in the Christian sense. There's no place else to go. There's no water to drink. There's no air to breathe. And then we've used our resources and we've hit the edge. We've hit the cusp. And this is just best we can do is make the best of the day and keep watching the pageants and saying, ooh, ooh, ooh. And, I happened to be in a place where I could watch a little bit of TV the other day, and I happened to be on TLC, and oh my God, that Honey Boo Boo.
You saw Honey Boo Boo.
That is so sad. I was just heartbroken. I mean, that's child abuse. It's exploiting poverty.
Yeah, the neologism that was coined for it, Kate, is poorsploitation.
Oh, well.
And that's and it is exactly what you said it is. The latest round in that is that Rosie O'Donnell has offered to buy them a new house. And they said, no, thank you. We like where we live, but we wouldn't mind a little renovating and an extra bedroom.
Well, I understand that.
I do, too.
Why would you want a new house when you've lived in this one for so long? And it, you have to pay taxes on a new one and shit. You know, why would you just, yeah, God. Well, I mean, I assumed was the mother and the child that I just, and I looked at that and I thought, holy shit. Oh my God. And this is and I just shut it off. It was so sad to me. I can't stand when people are abused that way. It was almost like making fun of mental illness. And,
Well, it sure is.
Mm-hmm. And I just felt so much compassion for them that it was just very sad to me. I just don't know. So anyway, well, I just think that our elections are going to be, it doesn't really, I don't even want to start because I'll piss off half of the audience and the other half will hang up and go away and don't listen to me. Just send money. I had this big argument with you two a long time ago back in 2008 and it was just, and I just kind of roll my eyes and say, see, why is everybody disappointed? Oh my God, why is everybody disappointed? Ooh. So.
Well, I wasn't one of those who was laboring under the impression that this was the second coming of FDR.
No, I know you weren't.
Among other things, I knew about him swanning around southern Illinois and northern West Virginia and western Pennsylvania and eastern Ohio with coal executives in tow, talking about us being the Saudi Arabia of coal.
Mm-hmm.
That told me a lot about all I needed to know about him, his liberal street cred.
And my arguments always got shut down by, well, he'll be better than McCain. Well, okay, can't argue with that, cowboy.
Right, just like you can't argue with the fact that he'd be better than Bishop Willard.
No, right. So anyway,
yeah, so you know, come the day, I'm gonna go toddling down, and I'm gonna go cast my vote, understanding precisely what it means.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a vote for change. This is a vote for not getting any worse than it already is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This is not necessarily a vote for getting better.
Mm-mm. I have a question about the baptizing thing.
The
dead baptizing? And how people get upset about that. If I don't believe in heaven, hell, God, devil, all that shit, why does it matter if some maniac cult goes off and baptizes my grandma? I mean, it doesn't make any difference because they're not doing anything. It's just like breathing, you know.
I don't want to get overtly graphic, but I'm kind of gonna anyway. It matters for the same reason as it would matter if, let's say, you've got Granny laid out for her funeral.
Right.
And everybody's outside the room, and then, you know, you lead the mourners in, and you find some guy up there behind her going to town.
Well, okay.
It don't matter to Granny. Granny's dead.
Right.
But it is horribly shocking to those who have lived on to witness it, Kate. And I don't believe so much as an iota or a scintilla of the lunacy that passes for Mormonism. I think it is laughably stupid. But
yeah.
From things like dead baptizing come things like the rewriting of histories. As someone noted, consider if the Mormons can dead baptize enough Holocaust victims, how far are they from claiming that Mormons were persecuted in the Holocaust?
And I don't know.
And at that point, that becomes a necrophilia not just of an individual, but of an entire history. And when you do that to history, you're doing that to humanity.
Yeah.
So I mean that's I'm horrified by it because somebody loved that dead person, and even if I don't share their faith, for instance, I can still feel that sixth sense of shock and disgust, because it isn't just a matter of some lunatic cult doing its lunatic cult thing. It is a violation of the individual and the family of the individual and the progeny of the individual. And it's also an overt manifestation, I think, of a sort of a sick sense of religious privilege. They can do anything they want to because they're a religion.
Mm-hmm.
And it just gets me sideways.
Speaking of religion, a woman here at my apartment building has a New Yorker subscription, and she brings her New Yorkers down to me, and that's one of the benefits of living in the community. I get a free New Yorker. I read an article on Brian Fisher. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah, the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi.
Oh, my God. Oh.
I had no idea. I got to go find that.
Oh, I don't even know what...
Did they do, like, deep background stuff and...
Kind of, yeah.
And it's
yeah.
even creepier than I thought, huh?
Oh, he's awful. I just wonder why nobody's taken him out. I probably shouldn't say that on air, but whatever.
Because the ones who would are the ones who have the guns, and the ones who have the guns are on his side. That and the fact that our side tends not to do that kind of stuff.
I know. Sometimes that just pisses me off. That's why I sit at home. And when I listen to you and Malloy, I sit here and then I back to back, and then I get ready to turn in, and I think all the people you're talking about, and they're out there. They're outside my door. They're out there next door to me. They're in rooms where I attend meetings. They're at the VA. They're everywhere, and I think I don't even know who to talk to anymore because the woman down the hall is a birther, and I didn't know it. I've been here 2 years, and I didn't know it until one day in the hallway we were talking, and I went, oh, my God. So I don't even go out and talk. I just don't go out of my apartment. I just sit here, you know, and it's getting time to, I'm getting white line fever, and it's getting time to get on the road, but I'm thinking I'm probably not going to get back to the Smokies this year because of, you know, finances. My truck is kind of getting tired, and so am I, and I'm thinking, well, if there's any kind of volunteer work to do, any, you know, that I probably should be doing it here at home and not driving 2,500 miles to go work in a RAM clinic, you know. So
right.
I'm probably not going to be coming east this time, and that just breaks my heart because I want to be just on the road again. But I guess you got to stop somewhere, huh? As long as it's not against a brick wall.
Yeah, that sudden stop can be a bit of a booger.
That's a bitch. That, you know, right? At 60 miles an hour, yeah. Anyway, well, you said the lines were stacked up, and
Well, I did want to let you know you got fan mail in. Isaac just wrote in and said, "I love this caller. Keep her on." So, but
Thank you, Isaac. And I really appreciate all the new emailers and the new callers so much, because we were getting kind of ho hum, you know, like. Some people I would roll my eyes and think, oh, dear, okay, never mind. Oh, well, I mean, there's always something interesting to say, but it's good to hear new voices and hear new emailers and get new contributions.
Now you know you are an icon around here, Kate. You got to be careful because you're liable to have people out there wondering, am I the one that she rolled her eyes at?
Probably. If you got the question, you got the answer, honey. No, I don't intend to be iconic. I just have a big mouth and a big concern for the horn, because we've been here a long time, and God, we've been through so much. never mind. Anyway, we can go into archival information, but that, you know, we want new people. So, anyway, keep that money coming in. We got another week to go. This is not the end of October. It's only that we've got the money for today.
Right,
this week, right.
We've drawn even with where we need to be for the middle of the month.
Well, it's the 15th or something. Isn't it the 15th, 16th?
Yeah, this is the 16th. This is the middle of the month.
Okay, we've got two more weeks to go. So we're
right, so we've got $100 a show to raise. It's one of those things, Kate, where you can't say I mean, if you look out the road and say, we've got to raise $100 a show for every show that happens for as long as there's the horn,
mm-hmm.
you can't make it.
Well,
all you can do is one day at a time.
Yeah, keep passing the hat. Keep passing the bucket. Say the rent's not paid yet, so we do have, you need to keep apprising people of.
Well, yeah, I mean, I did the math, but I'm not going to say, hey, we got to raise $1,000 tonight. But, basically bills fall at either the end / first of the month or the middle of the month.
Right.
Here at the middle of the month, we're looking at water and power and we're looking at somewhere around $1,000.
Right.
And so, I pay them as the funds come in, I pay the money out.
Right.
And that's how it works.
With your gallbladder, that kind of stress is no way to live. I know.
Well, yeah, this is not a plea for sympathy. But at some point in time, if we can make the little sticks fall in the Tao Te Ching the way they need to fall, or whatever, this thing's coming out, which means my butt is going to be away from the microphone for a few days, I'm guessing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm just guessing. The surgeon will say that sitting up for 6 or 8 hours at a time immediately after mm-hmm. surgery is not a good idea.
It's contraindicated, yeah.
So however long I'm gone is going to mean that the horn is going to probably become financially destitute, which means shit's going to get turned off, which scares the daylights out of me because, they turn you off. They don't want to turn you back on without, we're going to need a $200 reconnect fee.
Or a $1,000 deposit.
Right. And what happens then?
God. Well.
Because I don't, bless his heart, John Fox has been really, really kind to step in and fill in. But he's reached a point in his world where he's out there working every day, trying to keep it together. And wonderful that he is. But there's really nobody I can call on to say, hey, will you do the show for a few days while the skin comes back together?
Right.
So it means I'm Peter? Gone and it's what reruns.
About, what about Peter? Is he still wired?
No.
Oh.
No, I mean, there's no one.
Okay.
That's why it used to be so frustrating when I'd get those emails saying, well, what do you think? You're so special. Why don't you just turn the mic over to somebody else? I'm sure they'd be happy to do it for you.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, the phone system is wired into this studio.
Right. Okay.
If somebody hosts, it's because there's somebody.
Oh, right, because when Peter was on, you had to be in the studio to relay the program.
Right, and John would do it and use Skype, but that's only one line at a time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it makes it kind of hard to flow that way.
Yeah, yeah. Peter and I never did figure out. He wanted me to co-host the show with him I didn't want to move to Tallahassee. Anyway, never mind. Oh, the good old days. And if somebody go to Peter's, they're in the archives on White Rose. I think he still has them up.
Oh, yeah, they're still up. They're still up.
Yeah,
and some of the best fun I ever had behind a microphone, I think the horn section archives are still up too.
Oh my God, yeah.
And that was a nice little run. Me, John Fox, and Peter just riffing for an hour between the end of my show and the
Yeah, that was good stuff. Good stuff. It'd be a shame to lose any of this, and so. I would just entreat the new listeners one more time. If you haven't contributed, please do. And maybe we can get a build up. If we knew when you were going to go in for surgery, maybe we could get a build up to get ahead of the power bill or ahead of the water bill or the internet, and then you wouldn't get disconnected.
Yeah, you'd have a little cushion.
Yeah, if we had a date and we knew approximately how long you were going to be off air, then maybe we could rally up, we could rally around and get that a little buffer built up.
Well, and I don't think he's going to look at me tomorrow and say, let's go day after tomorrow. because we're going to have to go to the financial office and bow and scrape and give DNA samples and last known whereabouts and probably surrender passports and, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, right.
If they decide that we're finally poor enough again to get some level of subsidization.
Well, I mean,
it's a brutal country. It just is.
It is.
I mean, it's like what Beth wrote in last night talking about in Texas. You basically can't get it unless you are very, very old and very sick, or very, very young and very sick, and that even prenatal coverage for mothers cuts off 2 weeks after the birth, postpartum problems or not.
Right.
It's the greatest country in America, Kate.
We have the best health care. I have a 93-year-old neighbor who was bleeding, and nobody could figure out where. We kind of knew where, but she had to go to the hospital, and they kept her in the hospital for 10 days, couldn't find where the blood was coming from, rectal or vaginal, and I said, what? Are you kidding me? And she had 2 units of blood, 3 or 4 specialists, her kidneys failed, and then they brought them back, and the yada. I bet you her bill is going to be like $150,000.
If it's not more.
If somebody said, why are they keeping Betty in the hospital? And I said, because she's got good insurance.
She's getting a radical coverageectomy.
Mm-hmm.
I will never forget. It's a sad thing, but, I mean, enough time has passed that I just talk about it, Kate. My mother was 72 years old, 71 years old.
Right.
Went in for a splenectomy in November, mm-hmm. died the mm-hmm. following June, never saw the doors outside the hospital. And mm-hmm. it was interesting that they came to my father and me after they had exceeded Medicare's $1 million coverage limit, and mm-hmm. after, and said, you know, it's time for you two to stop playing God.
Mm-hmm.
You got to let her go.
Yep.
The only thing in the world that doc had best be glad I didn't let go of was my father, because he was, mm-hmm. you know, that old salt may have been 72 years, 73 years old, but he was ready to do some damage. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Run up the skull and crossbones, boy. We're broadsiding. Ramming speed.
Oh, your dad's a card. Every time I see company license frames on the back of a car, I think of Kenneth, and I think, oh, man.
You get that thing off there. You didn't pay me to advertise your car lot.
Yeah.
I mean, I used to think he was just being cranky. He's like, oh, come on, Dad, this is a little embarrassing. But you get a little older, and you think,
uh-huh.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah, because that was my dad's money. He was spending, and he was spending. You know, he was, and you know, and the interest for the note and everything. And they want him to drive around with a badge on the back of his car saying where he bought the damn thing.
Like, that's like the license frames that say once a Marine, always a Marine, or my son is in the, you know, I think there's another Republican going down the road.
Right.
You know, I just,
right. But with these car lot things, I mean, I'll never forget when I was old enough to appreciate what was going on, when he looked at him and said, and before I drive that thing off the lot, get your name off the back of my new car.
I said, remember that.
What? And he said, get your name off the back of my car. He said, well, we just put that on. I don't care what you did. Now, if you want to go in and redo the papers, and I'm going to own this car for 5 years. If you want to go in and redo the papers and take $1,000 off per year for the next, take $5,000 off as an advertising fee, you can keep it on there. But otherwise, take the damn thing off. The next two words were, yes, sir.
Yeah, he was a card. Oh, God. Anyway, well, bless his heart. Okay, other good news. I got word from Mississippi that Isaac didn't do, was it Isaac? Ivan? What was the last name?
Yeah, Isaac.
Ike was just a few years ago. It wasn't so bad that there was, you know, there was flooding and all that stuff. It was awful. But, she didn't call me back to come down, like, cause I'd called right away and said, if you want somebody to do your paperwork, cause I know you do a shitty job on your paperwork for the FEMA. And I said, I do good paperwork. She said, yes, ma'am, you do. But they never did call back. So I, you know, it was probably a good thing cause
could have been worse.
I'm here with my little 93-year-old who I'm kind of waiting on her to leave.
Well, I think the universe maybe knows you need to be there.
Yeah, like remember Georgia used to say, oh, honey, you just sit. I said, but I should be up doing something. And she said, you just keep doing this respite, darling, because pretty soon you're going to get called to do something and you're going to get all tired in a hurry. So you just sit there and rest. And so I'm sitting here reading and resting and listening to Horn and the Malloy Show. And okay, so anyway, thank you all new callers and new listeners, and really appreciate you. Your breath of fresh air, and I'll or we've had smoke in the air here for, we got 60 mile an hour winds today though, so the smoke's all gone, but it's a big winter storm, and we got some snow up in the mountains, and yay, it's October.
Just, and so by the way, I got to tell you before you go, Kate, we just got another contribution in, and the message just says,
oh,
from not too far from Granny T, signed Underdog.
Oh, oh, okay, thank you.
That's
thank you,
nice.
Thank you. Yes, it is. Oh my God, I don't know what. Oh, she's over by.
Now wait. She doesn't like to put it out. Yeah, we just say West Tennessee.
I thought she said one night.
She did. She did. Right. Yeah.
Oh, okay, but doesn't like it put out. Okay, yeah. Sorry, Granny. Sorry. Yeah, West Tennessee, pretty country.
Yes, it is.
It ain't the Smokies. It's pretty.
It's pretty country with some like I said, with some just mind-boggling Indian Mound complexes.
Oh, my, yes, and that river. Mm-mm-mm. Anyway, and the pyramid in Memphis.
Here.
Okay.
Kate, have a good night, dear. So good to hear from you.
Thank you, darling. Agnes is still hanging around there. Turn around and give her a hug, okay?
Well, she's not, but I will when she comes in. Bless her heart. She's been keeping me well-stocked in hot tea.
Okay, yeah, she's hovering. I know she is.
Yes, she does.
She's on full battle mode, right?
Yep.
I know that
sweat
feeling.
Condition all alpha.
Right. Yeah. All righty, then. Good night, y'all.
All right, see you, Kate. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Kate from the Front Range. We don't hear from her a lot, but she packs a wallop into a call. Onward we go. Oh, by the way, Tracy, lady cab driver. You know her in the chat room and from her calls. She said, she wrote in, she said, you can say my name. As much as I run my mouth on your show, it's the least I can do. Thank you, Tracy. Thank you so much. Let us continue. Hey, welcome to the program.
Speak the devil's name and they will.
Oh, Jesus. Beetlejuice.
Oh, my God.
And
oh,
Tracy.
My God. Hey, honey. You know, I'm listening to what you were saying about your mom and about how long she was in the hospital before she passed. And it makes me think of my sabbatical when I was in the hospital, because I was in the hospital. They were trying to keep me. And me being as ornery as I am and, you know, motherfuckers coming in and waking you up every 2 hours.
Yeah.
Once you get to sleep. And I'm like, so when they said, well, Ms. Porter, we really think we should keep you another day. And I said, well, okay, so tell me what you're going to do for me that my mother, who is a RN, cannot do for me at home. Do I need any more injections? Do I need any more IV? What are you going to do? Is my surgeon going to have to open me back up? Is there anything that cannot be done for me at home that you need me to stay here for? I might took you too long to answer. I'm out.
Get my clothes.
I'm out. Because, see, like your mom, I have Medi-Medi. And for those of you who don't know, you know, I live in the great state of California. See, Bob, you need to come on out here to California.
Well, I mean, we got to sort out what the universe is saying to me. with me having these Los Angeles dreams, Tracy. I don't know what that means.
I mean, I know your gallbladder is going to be removed and all that, but...
Well, that ain't no sure thing yet.
I swear to God, I was thinking about you today when I had a deep-fried shrimp taco.
Damn you.
I love you.
Oh.
I'm telling you, the only thing... because all these... Hopefully, they won't remove your gallbladder because if you, my mom had her gallbladder removed, and... She still eats fried food, but she pays a dear price for it.
That's what everybody tells me. You know, if
she still eats it. And she eats it, because I took her to have because I forgot that she had her gallbladder removed.
So a deep fried shrimp taco, Tracy, is that like battered or something? Or
No. So they take the shrimp, okay?
Yeah.
And they put it in the tortilla.
Yeah.
And they fry the shrimp inside the tortilla.
So it's a soft tortilla.
Yeah, it's a soft tortilla. And then they deep fry the tortilla with the shrimp in it. And then they cover it with salsa on this homemade salsa and like basically a half an avocado.
Huh.
The price just went up. I hate to say it. They were $1.50. Now they're $1.75.
now you're just being spiteful.
Yeah, I am. Because, when I'm listening to...
I can't get a double cheeseburger at Wendy's for $1.75?
No, you cannot.
Nobody can.
No, you cannot. Nobody can. But there is a place by my house,
so
guys.
$3, and I'm a happy camper by the shrimp taco
camper.
Truck.
Yeah, and see, and plus they bring the sodas from Mexico with all the sugar in it.
Oh, yeah. What are those? The Jarritos?
Yes. And plus the Mexican version of Coke and 7-Up.
Oh, no. See, we've got the Mexican Coke in my local Kroger. See how I work in the product placement? I'd be so good at this. We got the Mexican Coke, but the funny thing is, they even segregate the Mexican Coke. It's not in the soft drinks aisle. It's over by the Campbell's soup.
Oh, ours is in the international food section.
Well, we don't really have much of one of those.
No.
But it's a dollar a bottle. I can't have one but once every blue moon or so. But, when I absolutely, when it is just on me, that I must have a Cuba Libre?
Oh, yes.
Mexican Coke.
Have the Mexican Coke.
Wedge of lime.
Yes.
And if I could get Havana Club rum, but of course I can't, because
of
the stupid embargo.
I have the Haitian rum that you told me about.
Barbancourt?
Yes.
Pretty special?
It's very damn special. And my friends, I'm not a big drinker, but I drink good stuff when I do drink.
Well, that's kind of where I am. I don't want to sit down and drink 19 beers.
No,
but if I drink, if I have one beer, I want it to be a good one.
Exactly.
And that means German.
I have a liquor cabinet, basically. And I have the good stuff in that liquor cabinet, Hennessy, Kvassia, VSOP stuff.
Right.
And, so when people, do come over and they say, but you don't drink. I said, no. But when I do drink, I don't want will. Like you were talking about the alcoholic that goes from Jack Daniels to...
Mad Dog to rubbing alcohol.
To rubbing alcohol.
Yeah, I thought that was so apt when Paul brought that up, Tracy, because that really is true. I mean, did you catch that story? We are literally feeding our cattle candy.
Candy. Well, look at Honey Boo Boo. I can't call the girl cattle, can I? But I could call her Mammy Cattle.
I say
Mammy. See, when I say Mammy, I mean it in the derogatory because, I'm sorry, that is not a mother. That is not somebody who is lovingly taking care of their child and looking out for the well-being of their child, okay? I am a single mother. My son is grown, but I'm still, I still get that phone call. Mom, I'm like, fine, son, no problem. As a matter of fact, the $40 that I sent you was the $40 that he just paid me back.
Oh, bless your heart.
But the thing is, even I was struggling. I mean, dating, going out with men that I didn't like, but I knew I was going to get a good lunch or dinner out of that date to bring home leftovers to my child. Mothers do things that they have to, that they don't necessarily want to do to take care of their children. Sacrificing, going without. I mean, I know I did plenty of time. But to have that fat cow exploit that child the way she is, and then to have these TV executives.
That's where my problem is. It's not, there's exploitation all the way down the hill, but rolls downhill.
Let's start at the beginning.
Yeah.
Shit rolls down the hill.
Right. And it starts with those parasitic TLC TV executives who say, hey, have we got a redneck women reality show centering around? No, we don't. We got to meet that demographic. We can sell them some shit.
We got to make it happen. And I sat there once and watched, because I had never heard, blessedly so, until about a month or two ago, because I keep my mind pretty much dead on Jesus. No, I try to keep my mind away from stuff like that, because I am still recovering from surgery, and my hair can only take so much before it might explode. And so somehow my television was on Entertainment Tonight or something, which made me sick. Even thicker, and I saw this clip about Honey Boo Boo, and they're just laughing. The people who, and I use the term loosely, infotainment, and to say, Honey Boo Boo, and I'm sitting there like, where's the Honey Boo Boo child? And then they're going on and on, and they talk about the go-go juice of the Mountain Dew and Red Bull. That's what they give the little girl.
Right, yeah. Oh, that's her invention. And you know, Dr. Drew drank some on TV, or maybe it was Dr. Phil or Dr. Fool or, one of those babblers.
Dr. Sham.
Yeah, Dr. Sham. That's perfect.
Dr. Sham.
But, Tracy, all I can do is, and this is not to say that I'm better or worse than anybody. I'm just me.
No.
But I can remember when Ferg was considerably younger than he is now. He's, becoming a young man now. But he'd say, Dad, I want one of those Monster Energy drinks. And I said, son, I want for you not to have one of those Monster Energy drinks. And we'd go round and round, and I'd sit there and explain to him, this shit is not good for you.
Mm-mm.
You have boundless energy as it is. And one time, he got out from school early or something and walked over to the convenience store and got himself one and said, Dad, I don't want that anymore. I feel terrible.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess for some people, can you imagine giving that to a five-year-old, Tracy?
Look, I barely drink coffee, okay? I'll drink every so often. Fortunately, bless it, because I'm in a relationship. I am now officially a two-income person, family. I've never been a two-income family. It's fine.
Bless your heart.
I didn't know what it was. Bob, I'm 46 years old. I never expected that I would ever be a part of a two-income family. I like it. I like it a lot because it affords for me to do things that I would not otherwise be able to do. Contribute to you. Help my son. Contribute to Emily's list, nominee for, people running for office. It affords me to do the things that I could not do otherwise. And I thank God I'm in a two-income family at this time, because if Mittens win, we're gonna need two incomes. It troubles me. And I think about all the sacrifices that I did for my son, and I think about the fact that no matter what I'm one of those mothers that I can look at you and the conversation is over. When I say no, that's it. And if you try to say it again, I'm just gonna look at you. And that's it. So fortunately, I never had to have the conversation with Alex about, Red Bull, because he was a teenager when Red Bull started hitting, you know, hit the mainstream. Fortunately, he knows me well enough to not have even asked me if I would give him a Red Bull. It didn't even come into our conversation. Now, he more, you know, being a teenager, I'm pretty sure him and his homies or whatever at school or what have you, they had Red Bull, but he never brought it home around me because he knew that I would kill him because the stuff is poison.
Just on a general basis, I don't get it. I mean, I touched my finger to some and put it on my tongue once. It's
horrible.
Nasty.
Nasty. It's
nasty.
But my personal favorite are my friends who do the Red Bull and vodka.
Yeah, that's one I really don't get.
Even the
master marketers of that Budweiser pulled their alcohol and caffeine canned beverage off the shelves as
right.
a bust. But I mean, I remember years and years ago the experts saying, if you've got somebody who's badly intoxicated, don't give them coffee. All you get is a wide awake drunk.
Right. Hello. I mean, it's just the level of insanity it reaches to, and I'm going to do the segue. The level of insanity is the level of insanity of the right wingers who kept saying that Joe Biden was being mean to Congressman Ryan, and that.
Oh my God! Did you see that photograph of him washing dishes? I mean, Eddie Munster, no. Paul Ryan.
Oh my God!
He busted into a soup. His entourage busted into a soup kitchen that was already closed.
No!
So they could have a photo opportunity of him washing dishes in the soup kitchen. And so there's a picture of Paul Ryan with an immaculate white apron on that has not got so much as a damn drop of water on it, holding
right.
the spray nozzle on the long gooseneck mm-hmm. hose, like in a restaurant mm-hmm. kitchen. Yeah, spraying off a dish. The dishes were already clean.
Already done. Well, it's kind of like how Joe Biden cleans his clock. During that debate, I mean, I swore that I was not going to watch it. I was not going to watch it, but just so happens my girlfriend was watching it, and basically Joe Biden. It took everything that Joe Biden had at the bitch slap him and call him a fucking liar. And
well, did you catch Joe almost call him a liar?
Yeah, it took, you know, what did he call it? Tomfoolery?
No. It's before malarkey. It was before the malarkey comment. It transpired somewhat like this. Martha Raddysh had remonstrated with Joe, and Joe said, "Well, this would be a lot easier if he'd quit."
Yeah.
If he would use more candor.
To tell you the honest to goodness truth, I never really paid much attention to Joe other than when he would say something like he was sarcastic or something, you know, oh shit, you know, whatever. I loved him for that. But when I heard his speech at the Democratic National Convention, I have never heard a man speak with such
conviction.
Thank you. And so much love for this country. And so much love because he's like, I know the stories of these people. I live this story. My parents are these people, the people that I grew up with. And how is it that you don't love this? I mean, he loves this country to the very fiber of his being. He loves this country. And when somebody like Joe Biden is like sitting across the table from somebody like, you know, Ryan, he's like, I could see his insides gurgling and everything that he has to keep it out, whatever. I bet you he didn't even eat lunch or dinner before the debate. Cause had he eaten, he would have thrown.
Well, no, I mean, exactly, Tracy. All those right wingers saying, well, you know, he laughed and interrupted 82 times. Well, you know, you little piss ants better be grateful he did, because otherwise he would have been across the table with his hands around Lion Ryan's neck.
Neck.
Because I would have been. Anybody who does not have the professional training of the political class would have been across the table.
Oh, I would have caught another case. I would have caught another case for battery. Because I would have bitch slapped it. Because it's like, and I would have just, you are, because it took him to say, when he said, who do you trust? Whenever he would, you know, because what I liked about Joe, he, every lie that Ryan lied, he countered it with a fact. And whenever he asked the question, he's like, okay, well, tell me what you, oh, we can't disclose that and blah. Disclose what? You ain't got shit to disclose.
It's a secret.
You're full of it's a secret. It's a secret lie. It's a lie by omission. Because, see, you can't, he just said, well, you can't say we're lying if we don't tell you. I said, well, a lie by omission is even worse. Because you're doing your best to hide the lie. I'd rather you just lie to my face. Kind of like my dad lied to my mother and said that he had the mumps and he was sterile.
Huh?
And I was born 9 months later.
Sorry, didn't mean to chuckle.
No, but it's like, just lie to my face, you know, because at least when I catch you in the lie, I know you lie, okay? Just lie to me. Just say, okay, you know what, Tracy, I'm lying to you. I am just lying that I'm saying that I am not going to cut, you know, taxes from the middle class. I'm not going to take away the tax credit for people sending their kids to college. I'm not going to take away the tax credit for owning your own home. I'm not going to do, just say I'm going to do all this shit so I could be prepared. So when I bend over, at least I'll have some spit. I'm not asking for grief. I'm not even asking for a kiss, you know?
Right.
Just a little spit, okay? So at least I will be prepared for the ass screwing. I'm going to try to be not as vulgar as I know I can. And
we all know you're a lady, Tracy.
There are the tendencies for me to be a lady. For the reaming that this country is going to get if this man is elected into office. And like I said the last time I called, these little people running around with their little Romney stickers and all this with on their little scooters, and these people that I picked up with their Romney placards in their yards for access.
Oh, that's all there are in the yards around here.
Mm-hmm. I just laugh at these people. I feel bad for them. Because, see, all these benefits that you are getting, they're going to be, like you said, I love it, that word, niggardly.
Yeah, N-I-G-G-A-R-D-L-Y.
Niggardly. They are going to snatch, they're going to do everything they can to take away what money is all in all these programs, and make sure that there is nothing left while their homies are kicking it. Like you said, like the, you know, the lie about the bra burning and the, you know, the bankers, Wall Street bankers jumping out of their, you know, their offices, you know, during the great crash of 29 and all that. It's like the banksters now. They're not hurting. They're okay. It's just my friends and families that are upside down in their house notes. Or they just walked away from their home because of deceptive, you know, practices by the mortgage company. But nobody talks about that, you know. And it's just, you know, I still hold out hope that.
Yeah, and let's get one thing real clear real quick, Tracy. Just as the Republicans ran in the 2010 midterms hollering about jobs, right? And then proceeded mm-hmm. to take power and do absolutely nothing about jobs.
You know, exactly.
They're still doing that same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And imagine a President Romney administration. And so we'll start asking, okay, it's January 21st, Willard, where are the jobs?
Where are the jobs?
And he'll say, well, you know, I inherited a real mess from, you know, that black man.
That's what happens when
you let one of them take hold of things.
Even though, you know, they tell us not to, they're telling us that it's not our fault.
And he will explain, and you know, they've criticized Obama for pointing out that he inherited a mess.
Right, exactly.
But the same excuse will be used for at least the first 3.5 years of the Raw Money administration.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like the same, you know how you would say, the hypocrites. As my grandma used to say, they're talking out of both sides of the mouth.
Yeah, oh yeah.
The ones that, you know, when the jobs report, the one that came out, what was it, last week or the week before? Well,
yeah, and former GE chairman Jack Welch said, well, they just made it up, the gall of them.
Right. Now, how is it that that same jobs report that was saying that, you know, unemployment was up? So you can't have it both ways. Because if it's, that's the same jobs report that you're using to say that unemployment is up, so once it goes down, so it's a lie. So, but how is it a lie? So then that means the job report.
Right. But it's because they're psychopaths, sociopaths.
Psychopaths, like you said the other day, sociopaths, they have to be sociopaths because they can lie on the spot and they don't give a damn. They know the difference between right and wrong. See,
they know the difference. They just don't care.
But they choose. They don't care. They don't care. And I keep holding out hope. I mean, you know, I might be going to Nevada this weekend to help, you know, because the early voting has already started there, to help, you know, do the phone calls and knocking on the doors. I just might do that because I'm not going to give up. I mean, I just what tickles me is this, the debate that's happening today. Is full of people who are undecided. I guess they're going to be asking the question, how in the fuck at this point are you undecided?
Yes.
And that's my question. I mean, how are you?
Well, if they're all undecided voters, the first thing I'd like to see them, okay, everybody, tie your shoes.
Right.
Because, raise your right hand.
How, at this point, can you possibly be undecided? Either is a yay.
Well, what demographic segment of the country would those undecided voters come from? They're not coming from the unemployed. They're not coming from the employed.
No.
How could you possibly be undecided? Somebody's lying.
Somebody is lying.
And that's because the for-profit media, who are deeply, you know, heavily invested in promoting these pageants, have a lot of money yet to make.
They have a shitload of money to make. I wish, you know, it just, whenever when I hear, like, Rush Limbaugh and those idiots talk about, you know, the liberal media, I wish the liberal media had as much power as they claim we do. I wish people like you and Malloy and Rachel, all these people, I wish you guys had the kind of pull that, you know, Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck and Glenn, I can't even say their names because it puts a horrible taste in my mouth.
Yeah. You know, Jim just pointed something out during our conversation that I think is very perceptive. He said, Jack Welch attempting to degrade the figures by the Department of Labor is just another right-wing assault upon a federal agency.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the absolute truth. Yeah, that they'd like to get rid of.
Like the EPA. What I was loving was, that was about a year or two ago when they were talking about getting rid of the National Weather Bureau or whatever and using somebody else, but they would still have to use the statistics from the National Weather Bureau.
Yeah, that was Rick Santorum's doing a few years back because patronage clients was AccuWeather of State College, Pennsylvania. Right.
Okay.
By the way, a couple of other emails coming in. Marty wants to know, what are you paying for a price for a gallon of gas, as he puts it, down there?
Okay, well, as a matter of fact, gas has finally gone back down. Shell regular gas in Sherman Oaks is $4.51 with Van Nuys. And I paid $4.41 because I have a Rouse card, which is like your Kroger card.
Right.
I get an extra 10%, 10 cents off. Woo-hoo-hoo!
Yeah, boy. That's the good stuff. $4.51 a gallon. I'll be damned.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, it was worse than that, sweetie. It had gotten up to $4.79.
Okay, I will not piss and moan the next time I pay $3.90.
No, I would give up something I can't say on the air, what I would give up, but just to see a three, anything. Out.
Careful, or it'll be careful. It'll go back to 503.
Exactly. I mean, we got to the point.
Okay. Yeah, Marty says he's doing 439 in Sacramento.
Mm-hmm. It's cheaper up there, and so it's just I went. I kid you not. 2 weeks ago, because you know I drive a cab, and just so happens that I had like three trips out to Duarte. Actually, no, this was just last week. On Monday, the gas was $4.09 a gallon. On Wednesday, it was Monday was $4.09. The following Wednesday was $4.19. The following Thursday was $4.39, and by Friday it was $4.59. And that was at ARCO, which is like the, you know, bargain basement gas here.
Yeah.
In the course of not even a week, it had gone up 50 cents. But what tickles me, when it goes up, it jumps up like 10, 20, 30, 40 cents. But when it comes down, it goes down like 3 cents.
Yeah.
Did I just say 3 cents? I didn't, there was no T at the end of that, was there?
Hey, we had a note in from Philip a little bit ago. I mentioned those L.A. dreams that I have from time to time and can't explain. He said, sadly, your dream about Los Angeles is not good news, Bob. Were Carl Jung still alive, he would tell you that you simply and inexplicably want to exchange one type of pollution from coal for another from smog. I'd recommend dreaming. I'd recommend dreaming about a more healthy environment in this country, but the show will be over. For that matter, the week will be over by the time I think of one.
Well, see, the thing is now, the reason why our gas, you know, so they're saying, the reason why our gas is so high is because we have a special blend of gas for the summer. And I have to say, because I grew up here, I've lived in L.A. all my life, and I grew up in the 70s with, you know, when we still had ethyl and all that different horrible gas.
Right.
And our air quality was so bad, you could see the air. And in the last, I could say, 30 years, 40 years, our air quality is, like, right now I'm looking at there is smog, but nothing like it was when I was a kid. I have no asthma. I have no issues as far as respiratory problems. But as a kid, I had to stay in the house because the air was so bad. It was just God awful. But it has definitely improved. But as they were saying, it was a refinery problem. And I posted on my Facebook page. It's funny because how are you going to say it's a refinery problem when I know for a fact my aunt who works for a refinery out here, typically, she's off for about a month or so, but she's usually back to work by September, no later than October. And this year, it's been the first time in 4 years, and the last time we had a gas issue was 4 years ago. And what was happening 4 years ago? We were having
an election, weren't we?
Uh-huh.
Now, those sweet little oil companies would never deliberately manipulate the price of gasoline to influence the outcome of an election. Now, dadgummit, this is not paranoid conspiracy theory radio. You just save that stuff for Alex Jones, Tracy, okay?
Well, see, the day before, President Obama, President, not Obama, not the other one, but President Obama and Mitt Romney's debate 2 weeks ago, that's when our gas prices really spiked. That particular day. In a state that is fiercely Democratic, in a state that basically is blue through and through. I mean, we had those pockets called Orange County and Kern County and, you know, up north with the people with the meth labs and shit like that. You know, nothing about Davis or anything like that. I'm sorry. But this state is basically a blue state. President Obama has this state. Pretty much, I pray. And like I said, that's why my mom is flying to North Carolina to vote. Because, like you said, I am not happy with our president, but, oh my God, if Mitt Romney wins, I'm moving to Canada. Did you hear that JetBlue is offering to fly people out of the country if their candidate loses for the president?
No.
Hear about that? You didn't hear about that?
Yeah, if they're candidate. So either way, they're, you know, they're right. They're, They're playing both ends against the middle, hedging their bets and
hedging their bets. I mean, I'm voting up on my Spanish. I'm moving to Costa Rica. They have socialized medicine down there.
Well, you know what? I'm still harboring hopes. Back it'll be 2 years in February. Actually, 2 years at the end of January when the Lib boat docked at Grand Turk in the Turks and Caicos Islands.
Okay.
And I thought that place was wonderful, just beautiful. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't completely touristed up. And I had done some reading before the trip and found out that at one point in time, the Canadian government had entertained the notion of perhaps inviting the Turks and Caicos to become part of Canada. And I'm just encouraging my Canadian listeners to contact their representatives
and see
if you can bring that back up. Get that back into the conversation.
Well, like I said,
because I would love to be a Canadian from the province of Turks and Caicos.
I'm right there with you. Well, it's like what I was saying about moving here to California. I mean, okay, yes, I'm on disability, and I'm eligible for Medi-Cal. But I didn't have to jump through a whole, you know, told them how much I have in the bank. I told them what I make. And guess what? I got Medi-Cal. It's gotten to the point now out here, Bob. I didn't know this because it's been years since I've had, you know, used Medi-Cal or anything like that. I've been eligible for it for years, but I didn't need it. I was on the, cause like I said, my doctor bills were up to the extent that I could afford to pay, you know, my 20% or whatever I was charged for my doctor's visits or my prescription. I was fine. It wasn't until I was signing, I found out I was going to have to have brain surgery and was going to be in the hospital for God only knows how long. I mean, like I said, my surgery alone was going to be $150,000, and that was just for my surgeon. That wasn't the anesthesiologist. That wasn't all the other people running around the operating room getting ready to cut me open and making sure that I was still breathing and warm and all this. And that didn't count about the people who, once I got out of surgery, who cared for me and brought me that nasty food and, you know, washed my butt when I couldn't get up and all that. That doesn't count all those other people, you know. So only by the grace of God, and like I said, thank God for it, because my percentage, I would probably be looking at $50,000 for that was going to supposed to come out of my pocket. And it tickles me when you, because I hadn't heard about Mitt Romney say that, oh, well, the government's going to pay for it or the bullshit. Like he said, that would have been me trying to work, tired and all this, paying people off while I'm in this damn cab. So no. There's nobody going to pay that bill but me. And like you said, nobody's going to pay the bill that you got but you. So
exactly.
for him, because see, he'll never have to worry about a bill. If him or any of his minions or his children or their children or his children's children or all these people get sick, they're going to have the bestest care. They're going to have the kind of care that you get the hospital wings named after you money.
What we identified as spaceship money.
Right. So when you look somebody, look directly in the camera and say, well, they don't have to worry. They just go to the hospital because the hospital or the government or somebody, they're going to pay the bill. You're not going to have to. Oh, really? Did you tell the collection agencies that when they called you about the money you owed them for your hospital, for you when you went to the hospital? Did you tell them that Mitten said that you didn't have to pay that?
I was thinking of maybe doing that when we go in to talk about the surgery.
I think you should.
Yeah, that, you know what? We could just sort of update the whole, who was that crazy woman in Nevada who said take a chicken to the hospital? Willard loves West Virginia. He's you know, he has coal on his Wheaties. After all, it's not a hot drink. So maybe I could take Willard to the hospital.
I think you should. I think you should call Mitten because he's so compassionate and he cares for others. I think you should call Mitten.
Yeah, but then he'd probably make Agnes have her parts put back in, and we'd have to have a. We'd have to make a baby, and we'd have to make another baby, and then we'd have to give it up to the to be raised as a Mormon, and because
yeah,
you know,
and
he wanted that other
yeah.
woman to do that. That's just too much.
Well, it's like what you were saying, because I as I was listening about the dead baptism.
Yeah, see, then I understand Kate's position of, you know, who gives a damn, you know, when you're dead, you're dead. But,
right, but
it's gross. It's just gross.
And if you know, like you were saying, how they would corrupt history, like those fools in Texas. What are they calling the slave trade in the Texas textbook? The
I don't know. Human flesh entrepreneurialism.
Something. It was like, you know, because it was, you know, slavery was too liberal of a word.
Yeah.
So
damn that
liberal language. Damn that liberal language. But it's just when you think about the Mormon Church, okay, and you think about the fact that up until 20 years ago, they wouldn't have let black people in. Or
well, did you know, I got a video here. I saved it. I got a video here from a Mormon elder that I'm kind of saving for tomorrow night, but I'm ruining it. From a Mormon elder from not that long back explaining that people of black skin are the agents of Satan on earth. How's it feel like get up in the morning and, you know, check the inbox to see if you got any instructions from the boss?
Well, see, remember when you...
You know, the one with the horn and tails and flowing with hooves.
But it's like when I see again black Republicans, black Mormons. I know what you people really feel about me. I know it.
You know what I saw today? I saw a story, and I'm not trying to just use shocking demographics or anything. I blew past it. I didn't even read it. So all I saw was what it was: a story about a black lesbian Romney voter.
Because my next thing was gay Republicans. They hate you. Well, I guess they could say me now. Well, I still haven't figured out if I'm gay right now. And I have a wonderful girlfriend that I love. So, you know.
You know what? You're in love. I think maybe it's on us, Tracy, to advance the 21st century, kicking and screaming. And maybe one of the things we say in the 21st century is, I have someone I love.
And who loves me.
Right. And everybody rejoice.
And everybody rejoice. And I have a two-income family because now I can contribute to the horn on a regular basis.
Bless
your heart. God bless America. And God bless the fact that I do live in a state, even though that, you know, we can't get married. I don't really want
to
get
again.
Here.
Thanks to those millions and millions of dollars pumped by the Mormon Church and the American Family Association and the Roman Catholic Church into the hate campaign.
Thank you, religions of love and peace.
Thank you,
love and peace, and you know, loving your fellow man and doing for the poor and taking care of others, doing unto others as. Because see, obviously these people, you know, unless they're into being screwed up the yin yang, I guess they are into do unto others as you want them to do unto you. So I guess everybody is just going to take it up the ass.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, I've got a happy little story. When I got out of the ER the other night, and remember, this is West Virginia. This is one of the most bigoted states in the union. It just is. Mm-hmm. I'm not proud of it, but I got to live in reality land. When we got out of the hospital the other night, my blood sugar was on the way down. I mean, you know, singing bass low.
Right.
And, you know, the sweat was popping out and I was shaking and stuff like that. It's nasty. And so we popped into a local chain restaurant just to get a bowl of soup into me because there wasn't much I could eat at that point in time. There still isn't. And we sat down in a local chain restaurant and a young man served us. And I was talking about how much I enjoyed what I had ordered, and he said, my partner does too. He has it every time we come in here. And he walked away, and I went, honey, you realize what he just did? You realize how much he trusted us?
Trusted you to say that. And he shouldn't have to.
No, but he did in West Virginia. in a little bitty hick redneck backwards backwoods coal friendly friend of coal loving I mean and
coal and he said my partner
and he used the pronoun he and we didn't turn green. We didn't turn blue. We didn't cross ourselves or cast out no demons or start speaking in tongues or nothing.
Your head didn't start turning around?
No, we smiled and talked about, you know. And,
well, it's like my mom, like I said about my mom moving back here to California.
Right, but in that moment, Tracy, I realized.
That's a special moment.
I realized that the 21st century, the one that we all dreamed about, we of a certain age who were promised bases on the moon and stuff.
And fly. I'm waiting for my damn. I gave up on the 40 acres and the mule, okay?
Yeah.
Can I get my flying car now?
You know, right. And so that was one of those 21st century moments where you kind of look up and go, you know, I take one of those Brother Albert stances and go, yeah, there's evidence that we can be all right. And by the way,
there's
your fly.
Evidence.
I tell you what, I don't have your flying car for you yet. But I do have a story from the New York Times from October 12th. Yeah, I'm sure. I don't know how you feel about jet skis.
My girlfriend likes them.
Okay, so dig this. Dig this. This thing is going to sell like freaking hotcakes in Hillbillyville.
No.
The new company is the Gibbs Quad Ski.
Oh God.
This is so cool. This just tapped into my little consumer gene, and I just went, oh, I want one.
I want it. Okay.
This is a jet ski with wheels, and the wheels fold out, and it turns into a four-wheeler.
Oh. Honey Boo Boo's family's going to have one. You know they're going to be the spokespeople.
You're just hateful.
You know. Because
oh, there'll be a product placement endorsement deal. Honey Boo Boo will be taking the pig for rides.
All the thing, and because you know they had. Did you see the episode? I mean, they put the clips when they were mud wrestling. They put the water. They turned the water on and slip and fly.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. And put I think laundry soap, dishwashing liquid, and they had. So,
yeah.
So this is something you could do in the mud. Yeah. You know, because there's not much four-wheeling.
But, you know, even in Honey Boo Boo, there's a little moment of hope. Because there was that clip where they got the new pet pig.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. And Honey Boo Boo said, somebody said, but it's a boy pig. And and Honey Boo Boo said, he can be a girl pig if he wants to.
There you go. Go ahead on, Honey Boo Boo. You know what?
We're going to find the 21st century if we just keep wandering around.
Well, it's like
even in Georgia.
My mother came back out here because she was having medical issues. And finally, she came back out here, and my doctor diagnosed it right away. And so she was saying, he was asking about the doctor that she saw, and my doctor, being who he is, asked her, so were they all white? And my mom's like, yeah. He's like, well, no wonder you didn't get better.
Man.
No wonder.
Okay, so we just took steps backwards toward the, you know, 18th century.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, yeah, because she's a black woman, and obviously, you know, she's
probably black. Hysterical. You know, uh-huh. I mean, yeah, she's black and she's female.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, probably just hysterical.
Doesn't matter that she has a master's in theology and, you know, blah, and a bachelor's in this and highly educated. She's my mother, so you can only imagine.
Yeah. The the apple falleth not far from the tree.
Not at all. Not at all. So, you know, she's been in North Kakalaki for, I guess now, since 1999, 2000. And she's like, beautiful country, beautiful people for the most part. But
still too many idiots.
It's just too many. And she's like, I got to come home.
Oh, and by the way, Ron and Raleigh want you to know your flying car is ready. and sent me a link from Motherboard. Story, FAA approves sale of flying car.
But I'm not going to be able to afford it. See, the flying car that I want is the flying car for the people.
Right, the one George Jetson had.
Because everybody had a flying car with George Jetson. You know, we went from Fred Flintstone and Barney Rubble using their feet to go, and we go from there to George Jetson, you know, in the flying car. And everybody had a flying car. So I want the flying car for the people.
Well, look.
Not the flying car.
Yeah, hey, Tracy, don't give up. It's not out of reach. I just read the story. You got that whole two-income thing going on for you now. The name of it is a terrafugia.
Terrafugia.
Terrafugia. The company is made up of a bunch of graduates of MIT. Yeah, of course. Well, no, duh. No.
I'm mad that they weren't Caltech, but go ahead.
It's been approved for the. Well, you know, you got to have goals. It's been approved for the consumer market. The name of the flying car is the Transition. It goes from being a car to a flying machine in just 30 seconds. It goes twice as fast as in the air as on the ground. And on the ground, it gets 30 miles a gallon. And in the air, it can cruise at 115 miles an hour for up to 450 miles. It runs on regular gasoline, and it's only $200,000. I want one. And I want a trailer hitch on it that I can pull my quad ski with.
But you can only pull the quad ski when you're on the ground, Bob. The quad ski is not approved for flying as of yet, right?
Right. No, we'll unhitch it before we take off.
I just want to make sure. Because there's just...
But then again, no, I think your criticism is well taken, and knowing me, I would forget to unhitch it.
Uh-huh, and see, there's just enough redneck. No, actually, there's just enough redneck in you. Not that you will forget to unhitch it.
Yeah, no, honey, why can't I get the nose down?
Why can't I just...
Sweetheart, did you unhitch the quad ski? You know, that's how that works.
See, I love you, and I know you well enough to know there's just enough redneck in you.
Yes.
There's just enough ghetto in me. That I still on occasion drink Kool-Aid, and it's called red Kool-Aid.
Mm-hmm.
Did I tell you
a long time ago about the Kool-Aid pickles?
Kool-Aid sickles?
Pickles.
Did you say Kool-Aid pickles?
I said Kool-Aid pickles.
Yes. Well, no, you didn't, but I used to eat Kool-Aid pickles.
Blew my mind.
I used to take, not only did I eat Kool-Aid pickles, but I used to take a peppermint stick and put it in the Kool-Aid, or Jolly Rancher.
Well, now, I was introduced to this concept at a meeting down in Mississippi, and I just sat there with my mouth hanging open, catching flies, going, this is the most brilliant idea that has ever struck food. Why are these not on the grocery store shelves all over the country? And it was patiently explained to me how you take the pickles, and, you know, you keep them in the jar, you pour off a little bit of the juice, you add in the dry powdered Kool-Aid mix that's already got the sugar in it. And you fill liquid to the top, put the cap back on, stick them in the fridge, forget they're there for a couple of weeks, and then you go to heaven when you open the jar again.
Like I said, there's just enough ghetto in me. I can appreciate. See, no matter where I wind up in this world, no matter how, if I ever become this famous, crazy black pundit who loves, you know what my dream is? I've had this has been your recurring dream about Los Angeles.
Yeah.
My recurring dream is to become a very wealthy black lesbian liberal.
You know what? There are dreams and there are dreams and there are admirable dreams. Because I mean, you know what? You've got a big chunk of that sorted out.
Yeah, and so I'm thinking. Cause see, there's nothing scarier to conservative white folk than an educated black woman, and even more scarier is an educated black.
Well, and you know what? There's another reason beyond
with
the white.
Money.
There's another reason beyond the white folks. You know what? I would love to see. I would love to see a debate between, say, Tracy and, do you know who Mia Love is?
No.
Okay, so they invited her in to speak at the Republican National Clavern. She's a congressional candidate running against the only Democrat from the in the House of Representatives from Utah, and she's the mayor of some little burg in Utah, and she's a black Mormon.
Like Gladys Knight?
And she is the daughter of Haitian immigrants, no less.
Well, because of all those missionary things that
I'd love to see. I'd love to just, you know, set up podium, Tracy, Mia Love, and just turn you loose.
Mm-hmm. Because, see, I'm a Christian. Oh, yes, that's another thing.
Well, so she.
Well, but
you know, her Jesus is Satan's brother and is Elohim's sons from the planet Kolob.
Yeah. I can see the planet from here. And so that's what, you know, I'm in no shape, form, or fashion a political genius or anywhere near that. But I'm just a person who knows right from wrong. I'm a person who loves this country. I'm a person who loves the Americans. Not just the rich Americans, but all Americans, especially the ones that have no voice, because I'm one of those people with no voice, as far as a voice that can reach, you know, to our elected officials. But there's a whole lot of more people like me, but they just kind of, like you said the other night, they just come home and try to keep their heads down so nothing will happen to them, so nobody will come after them, so nobody will point their fingers at them and say, it's one of them. I want this country to be what it was promised to, well, not so much to my forefathers and foremothers, but to the folks that wrote the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. I want that promise because this country has such great potential, regardless of the Ann Coulters and the Glenn Becks and the Paul Ryan and the Mitt Romney. I still have the faith and the belief that there's going to be enough of us to say, okay, yes, Obama screwed up. He wasn't this. He wasn't that. I keep hoping that he listens to Michelle more so than he listens to anybody else. Because Michelle gets it. She does. And I keep hoping that, you know.
Or maybe Michelle, let's add Michelle's mama into the mix.
See, I've been watching Mrs. Michelle's mama. And I would not want to cross that woman. First of all, she's from Chicago. And that's it. I think if Michelle Obama's mother had a chance, she would cut somebody and watch them bleed.
Jesus, Tracy.
What?
Nothing. No. Just.
You know, I that's just me. Because, like I said, there's just enough ghetto in me that I don't carry a knife or a gun.
Yeah, I'm thinking Mrs. Robinson. That's her name, isn't it, Mrs. Robinson?
Yeah, I believe, yeah.
I'm thinking she was probably living in Chicago when Dr. King was in Chicago.
Yes, she was living in Chicago during the race riot and all that. So Mrs. Robinson ain't nobody.
She stood by a husband who got up and went to work every day, even though he was being destroyed by multiple sclerosis. Now, there is some starch in that backbone that Ann, I've got a real marriage, Romney can't even begin to approach.
Like I said, these people cannot wrap their heads around. People have, like I was telling, and I've said it before, when I had Alex back in 1988, I worked two jobs. Not because I had to. Because I wanted to buy a car. Whatever I wanted to buy, you worked a second job knowing that it was not a permanent situation. You worked there for 3, 4, 5, 6 months until you made what you wanted to make, and then you quit. It wasn't because you had to work 2 and 3 jobs, not to because you wanted to go on vacation, because you decided, okay, I want to go to Hawaii or wherever, and I'm going to work, or, you know, an extra job, or I want a car, or I want to move into another apartment, a different apartment or a house. You work that extra job for that down payment or whatnot and so forth, and then you quit. Those options are no longer. First of all, you can't just to be able to find a job to quit. Let's go there. Unless you're gonna go work at Walmart. I ain't working at Walmart. I am loathe to go into a Walmart because I know what that those people stand for. So no, I'll pay an extra $5-$10 for something before I shop.
Well, and I haven't said it before, I am so proud of the people who had the courage to go on strike at Walmart.
Exactly. Knowing that it was, you know, knowing what they were up against. Knowing that these people are union-busting, capitalistic pigs who don't give a rat's ass about the people that work for them. Who, if it wasn't for the people that work for them, they wouldn't have the millions and billions of dollars that they have. Oh, God, I'm on my soapbox. Let me breathe.
I understand. Hey, Tracy, I'm going to roll.
I know we got to go.
Yeah, I got to. I'm going to try to get a couple more phone calls in here. But it has been a wonderful conversation, and thank you so much.
The letters coming and the money coming, and like I said, every time I call, it, even if I don't get through, I'm on the phone. I'm gonna send you a little something, something.
Bless your heart, Tracy. Thank you so much.
I feel you guys are so important. So, hello to everybody in the chat room. Kisses to everybody, and let's keep on pushing, shall we?
Let's do. Thank you, Tracy. Have a wonderful evening.
You too, my love.
Bye now. Tracy, the lady cab driver, calling from the roads of L.A. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey there. This is Grant from Portland.
Well, hey, Grant. How you doing?
Pretty good. I was more reacting to Kate's call than anything else, but Tracy really is a hard one to follow. She pretty much says it all.
You hold your own just fine, Grant. But I gotta admit, Kate and Tracy make a formidable team.
Indeed. Now, you know, Kate got me thinking about something. You know, there's a lot of things she was talking about as far as the atmospheric quality that we sort of labor under, and with the sort of dark prognostications look forward, but. What comes to mind in my mind is, you know, if the hell-bent sociopathic and crazy are just that way to the point where, you know, the rest of us who have to breathe this stuff, you know, want to react in some way. I was thinking in terms of a Haber-Bosch sort of complex, almost like a re-terraforming factory in some way. You know how I think in terms of gears and levers and
right
tech and stuff, and that's kind of what came to mind. I mean, you know, it's sort of like a reverse Haber-Bosch kind of thing, where instead of, you know, making ammonium nitrate and things like that, we're basically filtering out in terraforming, you know, sort of cones. We're looking for, you know, okay, 79% nitrogen, 21% oxygen, and then trace elements and that kind of thing, and we just spit that out. You know, at a nice, healthy 275 parts per million carbon dioxide. You know, that's what I'm thinking. You know, it's just one of my flights of fancy, but it's like, hey, I got nothing else. You know, when I come against
Russian
mobs or massy energy or anybody else. You know, when they just insist upon spewing, you know, mercury and carbon dioxide and everything else in the fucking atmosphere. You know. There's not much else I sort of leap to mentally to try to correct their mess.
Yeah. And I think what you're speaking to, Grant, is the fact that we have problems that are solvable.
Mm-hmm.
Where our insoluble problem, is it insoluble? Unsolvable? I don't know. Problem lies is not with the science. It's not with the technology. Or the application thereof. The biggest problem we have in this country today is the people who think there isn't a problem.
Yeah. Well, you know,
and the question then obtains, what do you do about them? Because they are the people who stand in front of solving the real problem.
I don't know. You know, in my darkest fantasies, I go back to Super Friends in the Hall of Justice. Remember that episode where they pumped a bunch of toxic gas into Union Carbide boardroom? I mean, you know, that's kind of shit. Yeah, I mean, you know, that's the kind of shit that comes to mind. It's like, okay, you like breathing that shit? We don't. You know?
Yeah, welcome to our world. No, I mean, it's like, for instance, there was this rather stunning story that I ran across late last night and sent it off to some of the new friends that I made over in Germany going, are you guys aware of this?
Yeah.
You know, one of the reasons I went to Germany was to address the general meeting of Deutsche Bank because they're a humongous financier of mountaintop removal.
Yeah, okay.
And I wanted to sort of add the authenticity of my poorly pronounced Guten Tag, mein Name ist Bob Kincaid sort of thing to the whole milieu. And they sat there and lied directly to our face. No, we do not do that. I'm from Switzerland. If we blew up mountains, I could not go home. Bullshit, you know? Don't pee down my leg and tell me it's raining.
If you're from Bavaria, it doesn't mean you're not a crook.
No, he was from Switzerland, and it was basically his big retirement party. But anyway, that's another story for another day.
I see.
But there was a story about a Deutsche Bank executive, and there's a video out there of him admitting to repeatedly, and this is, you know, this is Deutsche Bank, which has just lost money, lost value, of him repeatedly using bath salts. You know what those are, right? I mean, make you crazy, hallucinate your brains out, makes acid look like a walk in the park.
He uses this shit?
Yeah, and this is like the vice chairman of Deutsche Bank America or something.
Holy shit, at least he could have the decency to switch to heroin. Oh my God.
I mean, yeah, but if you're one of those, but the point is, Grant, if you're one of those massive investment bank sociopaths, you don't want to mellow out. You want to jack it up.
God.
I'm looking for this
and
character's name.
And the board has not expelled this creep?
Okay, here it is. It's from Huffington Post. Brian Mulligan, Deutsche Bank executive, admits to using bath salts 20 times. There's audio and graphic video. The quote, my lawyer will probably kill me when I say this, but I went to a head shop and I bought some of that white lightning stuff. And the story reads, only time will tell whether this admission by Deutsche Bank Vice Chairman Brian Mulligan will be the unraveling of his $50 million lawsuit against the Los Angeles Police Department. He made the statement during a recorded conversation with a Glendale police officer just 2 days before his violent confrontation with LAPD officers, which is the basis of his suit.
I'm sorry, Bob. You know, this is like the captain of the Valdez having three martinis and slaloming icebergs.
He brings up his pot and Ambien use, saying that marijuana made him feel like his face was melting off, while Ambien made him feel like his mind had a cast over it.
This doesn't surprise me.
Throughout the entire conversation, the police officer remains calm, advising him to throw the bath salts away and return to his family and career. So, you know, here's one of these multimillionaire assholes who may, for all I know, be responsible for the decision-making that winds up pumping money into the abject destruction of my home. And it turns out he's just a mind-warped street punk, with all due apologies to punks. Who generally behave better.
In a banker's chair, making decisions over the life or death of the whole population.
Yeah, I think maybe tomorrow I'm going to try to remember to play the audio of this. Yeah, here's your high-flown economic experts hitting the head shop and buying some bath salts so that they can, you know, so that they can get in touch with their lizard brains. Jesus, you know? Hey, Grant, I'm going to try to wedge one more call in. It's awful good to hear from you, my friend.
Good to hear from you, too, man.
All right. Sure. Bye now.
Bye.
That's our buddy Grant calling from Oregon.
Sorry, I just
hey, welcome to the program. Hello?
Hello?
Huh. That must have been an inadvertent. Huh. Sorry. I'm sorry about that, Grant. I thought we had another call, but I think I heard somebody at a cash register. But that does bring us to the end of the program this evening. Thank you so very much for joining in, for listening, sharing. I wish I could have been in the chat room with you this evening. I've gotten some great information about what may, I hope, sort out Java issues. Really appreciate that. Thanks to all of you for all that you do to keep this going. First and foremost, the very precious finite time you spend with us on any given evening. This is only a genial family conversation because the genial family is here to participate in it. Thank you. Thank you for keeping the lights on. Thank you for keeping the bills paid. However you contribute, thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Shorty. Thank you, Sal, for tonight's $100 challenge. Thanks, Dr. John. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. They're amazing. Lottie and Sparky in the chat room. Thank you, Texas Betsy, for always helping out. Texas Betsy is our blogger. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to Agnes, who makes sure there's a show post every day. Thank you to John Fox down in Australia. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org, for 10 years preserving liberal progressive radio on the Internet and doing it without ever having sent a bill. WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks, of course, always to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, whereat you can order the coolest t-shirt in the world, Save the Endangered Hillbilly. Get one before they're gone. I saw the stack the other day, and there's just not a whole lot left. And, of course, ACACT, ACHEACT.org. With his $100 challenge tonight, Sal said, keep promoting the ACE Act. I think it's vital. And it is. Literally, the future of this region depends on that piece of legislation. If we can end mountaintop removal via the ACE Act, then Appalachia has a chance. And you are the critical component in that chance, because it will be your advocacy of the ACE Act with your elected member of the House of Representatives that will make the difference in the passage or failure of this historic bill. I've got a great conversation coming up with Peter B. Collins later this week on his podcast. Look for that. And thanks to Peter B. Collins, and thanks to Andy for making that happen. ACEACT.org. You really can make more of a difference than you know. And when we get the ACE Act passed, you will know that you haven't just saved the environment. You will know that you have saved lives. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.
My buddy Rick Smith is next on the Horn.